I want to call to order a regular meeting of the Gover Beach City Council for Monday, July 16, 2012. And it's my understanding that there is a huge fire raging, I guess, out of control in Santa Margarita. And we would like to stand, have a moment of silence and prayers for the firefighters and the victims that are in Santa Margarita.
Thank you. Would you all join us in the flag salute tonight? And Councilmember Bright, will you lead us tonight?
I'd be proud to. Ready to begin.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America.
City Council voted 5-0 to deny the claim regarding process 2 and 3. There were no reportable actions taken.
Very good. Thank you, City Attorney. At this point, we're going to move on to the agenda review, where the council is going to review the order of the agenda as presented by staff and make any motions if necessary. Do any members of the council want to change the order of the agenda?
I'm wondering about the appointment of the Planning Commission.
Okay.
If maybe we might want to move them closer to the beginning. I don't know. It's just a thought rather than...
Okay, so... I know we have one new commissioner here this evening.
Yes.
Do you think would that be appropriate to move it above item number five? Or actually, it looks like we've got a first reading of a. I think we've got folks. We do have folks here for item number six, which is the regulation regarding restriction of smoking in public. Correct.
Mm-hmm. And
who's here for that item? Can you raise your hand? Okay, this one. Okay.
You want to move it?
Well, I'm thinking.
Wow.
I tell you what. Why don't we leave it where it is, and then depending on how we go through the rest of the items, maybe
okay.
We can move it at that point.
That makes good sense.
Okay.
Thank you.
Okay. Very good. Anyone else? Okay.
I'll move that we accept the agenda as published.
I'll second it.
Okay, there's a motion and a second. If there's no additional discussion, all in favor?
Aye.
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 All opposed? Okay, the motion carries. Okay, there's a lot of motion out in the audience and talking. If we can have some quiet, we can get to the business and get to your item quicker. So... thank you. So we are going to proceed with the agenda as presented tonight. And so with that, we're going to move into the ceremonial calendar. And this is item number one. And this is a proclamation designating July as National Park and Recreation Month. And I'm going to read this proclamation, and then I believe that Park and Rec Program Director Pat Kerr and I believe Mr. Battersby from Questa would like to have a few comments once this proclamation is read and presented. And this is a proclamation of the City of Gover Beach designating July as National Park and Recreation Month. It says, whereas parks and recreation programs are an integral part of communities throughout this country, including Gover Beach, and whereas parks and recreation are vitally important to establishing and maintaining a quality of life in this community, ensuring the health of all citizens, and contributing to the economic and environmental well-being of our community and region, and whereas parks and recreation programs build healthy, active communities that aid in the prevention of chronic disease, and whereas parks and recreation programs increase this community's economic prosperity through increased property values, expansion of local tax base, increased tourism, attraction and retention of businesses, and crime reduction. And whereas parks and recreation areas are fundamental to economic and environmental well-being of this community, and whereas parks and natural recreation areas improve water quality, protect groundwater, prevent flooding, improve the quality of the air we breathe, provide vegetative buffers to development, and produce habitat for wildlife, and whereas parks and natural recreation areas ensure the ecological beauty of this community and provide a place for children and adults to connect with nature and Recreate Outdoors. Whereas the U.S. House of Representatives has designated July as National Park and Recreation Month, and whereas the City of Grove Beach recognizes the benefits derived from parks and recreation resources, now therefore be it resolved that the Grove Beach City Council recognizes July as National Park and Recreation Month. Ms. Becker.
Honorable Mayor and Council Members, thank you very much. We are very proud of our Parks and Recreation Program here in the City of Grover Beach, and we want to thank you for your support. Also, I'd like to introduce Mr. Jim Battersby. He's a community member and also a YMCA chair board person, and he'd like to say a few words. Thank you.
Mayor Scholes, Council Members, staff, audience, Mayor Scholes introduced me as being from Cuesta. That was a while ago. I retired a couple of years ago. I retired from Cal Poly. While I was at Cuesta and Cal Poly, I had numerous opportunities to interface and work with the Grover discussion with Kathy Petker and others about your skate park, which remains closed at this point. I apparently since April. We are unanimously out here in South County, our advisory committee, in harmony with trying to get that place open again. We will hopefully be able to manage it effectively. Key to all this will be the Grover community stepping up and helping us out. We will be looking for financial help as well as other forms of help. So I know that's on the agenda later. I'm not tainting the agenda or anything, but I want to praise this department and this city. You're very admirable, and I know you have a tough fight ahead budget-wise. I wish you well with that, and I want you to know why South County Advisory is 100% behind you. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Jim, and yeah, I was about to gavel you. Jim was allowed to speak on this item. Is there anyone else in the public that would like to address this item? Okay, seeing none, come forward. Let's move on to the proclamation. The next one is a proclamation honoring Lieutenant John Bewick on his retirement from the City of Grover Beach. And I see John back there. So, and I know that the entire council will want to come around for a photo on this. This is a proclamation of appreciation presented to Lieutenant John Bewick for service to the citizens, community, and the City of Grover Beach. And it says, whereas the City of Grover Beach hired John Bewick in 1986 first as a dispatcher, then as a police officer, where he promoted to the positions of detective, sergeant, and eventually lieutenant. And whereas during his tenure on the police department, John Bewick played a key role in saving lives and solving a number of significant crimes with his keen investigative skills, his sense of compassion for the victims, and his knowledge of who the criminals were and where to find them. And whereas during his tenure on the police department, John Bewick was instrumental in the Toys for Tots, Special Olympic Torch Runs, Special Enforcement Narcotic Team, Juvenile Justice Investigators, Public Safety Chaplains Program, Juvenile Diversion Program, Citizen Assistance Team, Crime Stoppers, and whereas he was described by his co-workers as a team player, a peacekeeper, a central to the department, respected, a good supervisor, a mentor, a hard worker, experienced, dedicated, easygoing, calm, with a good sense of humor, the ability to communicate in a person who loves to tell a good war story. And whereas, as the range master for the police department, he brought the department's firearms training up a notch by implementing new training that involved realistic firearm scenarios and instituted the Top Gun Award, demonstrating his skills as the department's Top Gun winner. And whereas he was successful in obtaining a buffer zone protection grant from the Department of Homeland Security in the amount of $199,820 for equipment that will help protect and ensure the safety of our community. And whereas he has served in the community in a number of service organizations, including American Legion, the Footprinters Chapter 73, and the Fire Masons, where he presided as the Grand Master, and whereas he has served honorably and diligently in his duties and responsibilities to the Grover Beach Police Department and in service to the community of Grover Beach. Now, therefore, be it resolved that the Grover Beach City Council does hereby acknowledge and commend Lieutenant John Bewick for his 26 years of service to our community. Lieutenant Bewick. Stay there. Just him. Just the retiree. If you don't mind, please. Mayor, may I?
Yes, you may.
I stay here.
It's probably my last order I get to give to him. I've had the pleasure of working with John for 7.5 years now, and everybody in the department loves him, so he's definitely going to be missed. I can't really say much more than what was said by the in his proclamation. So I personally thank you for your service to our community, service to the department. And Commander Peters, together with some help, a plaque representing our thanks for you, and hopefully you have a place to hang this. If you want to bring that up, John.
Wow.
So we turn that around for the photo.
I would.
Now remember, we have a full agenda tonight. So.
Absolutely. Honorable Mayor, City Council, thank you. It's been an honor and a privilege to serve this community. We're in good shape right now. We've got good leadership here, you can tell. You know, my footprint's all over this department. Most of these guys here, even our chief, I sat on their oral boards. And we have the best department in the South County, as a matter of fact, in all of the county. So I would like to say a couple things. One, I'd like to thank the United States Army. They're the ones that started me on this path. And I also would like to thank Chief Brown. I know he's not here. He's our first chief. He was instrumental in helping me get my act together when I was a young copper, and he helped me dearly. Along with him was Peter Keith. And a lot of you don't know that my daughter survived a liver kidney transplant about 19 years ago. And I was pretty down and out. Well, those two guys came and helped me a great deal. And Peter, she lives because of you. Thank you.
So, John, before you leave, I read a resolution, but I want to make sure, I'd be remiss if I didn't say this. We really, really, really appreciate what you've meant to this community and having your fingerprints all over this department, because I can tell you, in 2003, 2004, we had talked about consolidating the police departments in the South County, and Grover Beach sponsored a facilitated meeting at the South County Regional Center, and we had discussions where we had the councils from the three cities, the police chiefs from the three cities, and each city got to choose a citizen at large. And when we were having this discussion, about halfway through the meeting, I asked, because I felt there was this big elephant in the room, where I said, okay, this seems to be a good thing to do, so why is there hesitation and reluctance? And what I discovered was that the departments in Arroyo Grande and Pismo Beach felt that Grover Beach was not at the same level as they were. And so those talks didn't go very far, and I've said this before. I can tell you, over the 7 or 8 years, and I've been on the council longer than that, unequivocally, we have got one of the best police departments in the South County, and I echo your sentiments exactly, and you've been a huge part of that. So, John, thank you so much for all you've done for this community. You will be sorely missed, but hopefully you'll still be around so I can pick on you a little bit.
Oh, yeah.
All right.
Thank you.
Okay, moving on with our agenda. This is item number 3. This is a presentation, and this is an update regarding the South San Luis Obispo County Sanitation District, and this presentation is going to be given by District Administrator John Wallace.
Mr. Mayor, Council, John Wallace, it's a pleasure to be here again. As you folks know, you're one of our 3 member agencies in the South County Sanitation District. So what I'd like to do tonight is give you a brief update on just the overall district, as well as a little bit more about the spill that we had about a year and a half ago. As you know, we are a 3-member body, and we're appointed by your member agencies. And right now, our directors are Mr. Nichols is chairman of our board, and Matt Guerrero, vice chairman from Oceano CSD, and then Tony Ferrara, the mayor of Arroyo Grande, makes up our 3-member board. The agencies, as you know also, our agency is bounded by the outside boundary of all 3 of your agencies. And on the screen, you can also see the trunk sewers that are under our jurisdiction. There's about 9 miles of trunk sewers that go up into the respective agencies that we operate and maintain. And your local sewers dump into our trunk sewers to take the sewage down to the plant. What kind of services do we provide? Well, it's wastewater treatment for sure, as you know, but we also have the collection system, the trunk sewers. We've implemented here over the last 5 years or so an industrial pretreatment program to keep those things that would be deleterious to the operation of the wastewater treatment plant out of the waste stream. And so that's a relatively new type of a program. Also, fats, oils, and grease, better known as FOG, that really reduces the amount of maintenance that you folks have to do on your local sewers by enforcing those regulations for grease traps and so forth with the food establishments throughout your jurisdiction. We have biosolids disposal. A new one is brine disposal, too, where we have a connect in the administration of the district is to try to keep the wastewater rates, sewer rates, low in our communities. This may be a little bit out of date because some of the figures are for 11-12 and others are newer, but you can see that the 3 agencies that are member agencies there, including your local costs on top of our costs, are some of the lowest in the county and certainly the lowest in the area there. And our intent is to keep the rates as low as we possibly can. Just to give you a little bit of a brief overview of the spill that we had in December 19th, 2010, and what we've done to prevent a similar spill in the future. Number one, this occurred during a declared emergency, both by the county as well as the state. We had never seen that kind of flooding come into the plant before. And the district staff was ordered to evacuate the plant by the sheriff's department, but they did not do that. They stuck to their duties and so forth. And so they performed very well during that emergency, given the extraordinary circumstances. We know no adverse health or environmental effects from the spill at this time. And one of the most important things is, in terms of what's happened before, this is our first spill in 25 years. I don't think any other wastewater agency in the county, maybe in a large part of the state, can say that. Certainly not some of the other local jurisdictions in this area, but it was the first one that we had in 25 years. And finally, you know, we've been fined, or we've had a what they call an administrative civil liability, an ACL, that's been laid upon us by the Water Board. We believe that that fine and the volume calculations are very much overstated and lack basis, and so we'll be having our hearing on that in September, but in our analysis, that's our belief. Just to give you a very brief conclusion on what happened then, we had the emergency. We had a diesel bypass pump located at the headworks of the plant. That's not required by our permits. That was something that your board took upon themselves about 5 or 7 years ago to buy a $100,000 pump that could pump the entire flow coming into the plant around the headworks. We have an emergency generator in case we have a power failure. The generator cuts on automatically, and the pumps continue pumping. But if the pumps go out for some reason, which they did in this case, we do have this diesel bypass pump. And it's otherwise, if we hadn't had that there, it would have been millions and millions of gallons of spilled wastewater. We also went out. We did field investigations. We looked at every manhole in the area that could have spilled. We confirmed what had happened at that manhole. We talked to eyewitnesses. We interviewed every neighbor that we could find that was out there at the time. And from our field observations, we confirmed what our hydraulic calculations were doing to say that we spilled in this case or that case. So we feel that the field verification of our calculations was very important. The state has not done that. Again, it was the first spill that we've had in 25 years, or actually probably 26 or 26 and a half years at this point in time. Just to give you a very brief overview of some of the flooding, this is a dry situation. The entrance to the wastewater plant is to the right where it says the driveway. This is a dry day. This is what was happening at about 10 o'clock in the morning on December 19th. And about 2 feet of water was coming into the plant. In some cases, the water outside was over 2 feet, maybe 3 feet deep. Similarly, these are wet and dry pictures taken off of Channel 6 of the same type of event there. You can see the wet up top and the dry version down below the same streets. These are in the lagoon areas right adjacent to the plant entrance. We don't know of any long-lasting effects of the spill. There was no threat to human health as far as we know on the adjacent beach. The health department got down there quickly once the high surf disappeared, sampled, and the beach came back clean at that time. We observed no biological impacts. The State Department of Parks and Recreation biologist said he knew of no impacts to Arroyo Grande Creek. And we've had extensive outreach to the community to let them know about this and to present more of the facts that actually happened. What have we done to reduce the chance for a future spill? You see a number of things there. We've gone out to the manholes that maybe were subject to being lifted by various folks out there to drain wastewater, our water off of the street. Those are now locked. We've updated many of our documentation, our O&M maintenance manual. We've replaced a lot of pumps and valves. The electrical system analysis was completed. All the electrical systems have been upgraded now. We're implementing a long-range plan, which creates a redundancy for the processes at the plant. So if we have a problem with one of our big tanks, we'll have something else that can take its place. And we've really upgraded and updated our emergency operations procedures. We are reviewing all the documents from the state, and we know that we have a lot of information to be submitted. The state has requested tons of information, which we've provided, and we're leading that up to our September 7th hearing. Now, I'll rush through that. I know you have a big agenda tonight. I'll be happy to answer any questions that you have.
Thank you for that presentation, John. Let me see if there's any questions up here on the council. Councilmember Peterson.
I do have a few questions.
Yes, ma'am.
I'm just going to go through sort of on the slide order. On the slide, sewer rates kept low. It was hard for me to compare apples with apples because some of them included estimated property tax, and I didn't understand what does that mean?
Well, some agencies include a portion of the property tax specifically related to sewers and wastewater treatment. And so in those cases, we wanted to make sure we captured the full burden, if you will, of the bill. And so we've also gone back and looked at each of those on the basis of a monthly charge. You folks bill every 2 months, but we've divided that in half so as to compare apples to the rest of the agencies here.
So I was able to verify that the Grover Beach charge was, in fact, correct.
Yes, ma'am.
But I just didn't understand if it includes estimated property tax. So have you adjusted it out for that then? Is that what you're saying?
No, you don't have that component in your billing.
Have you adjusted the others so that it's apples with apples now? Or?
Well, if there is a piece of the property mm-hmm. tax that's specifically related to sewers and for sewer services, we've included that. Most of those agencies
okay.
don't have that.
So are you saying that if there's been an additional property tax related to sewers, so if there's a bond or something like that related to sewers, you've included that?
Yes.
Okay, I understand that now. Thank you. And actually, the prior slide, the history of the SSLOCSD, you mentioned that initially this process was started because there were increasing levels of nitrates observed in groundwater. And I know from reading our water reports for the last 13 years that we still have some nitrates
right.
in our water supply. So has this helped?
Yes.
Has it improved?
Yes, very much so.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, that was the case back in the early 60s
mm-hmm.
when the groundwater was tested and found because of the sewer system that you had basically with septic tanks, and actually Roy Grandy had what they called a sewer farm down in this area here, and it did increase the nitrates in your well water. And so once the wastewater treatment plant went online, those nitrates have decreased over the years substantially. So you're well within compliance now for drinking water standards.
Thank you. And on the a couple of slides along, where you talk about the six homeowners that were affected, have they been made whole yet? How was their situation sorted out?
Well, we did an investigation to all the residences along the route, if you will, and we offered advice. We cleaned up the wastewater as best we could where it was reachable, and we did give advice to the homeowners about what to do with making sure that they disinfected their house that they felt that they needed to do that. What's really apparent is that floodwater has a lot of contaminants in it as well.
Mm-hmm.
So our wastewater, when you look at the amount of the volume of the wastewater, it was probably 0.1% of the total water that reached that lagoon area.
Okay.
So it was very diluted.
And that leads into another question I had about it. I know that I noticed that you said that the water was measured for contaminants on December 28th, but the event was on December 16th. Did
right.
anyone measure between the 16th and the 28th so that they had a real picture of
yeah.
whether it was contaminated?
Well, the beach was closed, and we normally would go down and sample right after a spill at the beach. There was a lot of high surf. There was a lot going on at the plant to restore the services at the plant. And the health department, the county health department, has the primary responsibility to make those tests. And they did not go down for what was maybe 6 days or so, 5 or 6 days after the spill. But the beach was closed, and there weren't many people on the beach at that time. So the potential for coming in contact with that water was fairly slim, but it's possible. But that's when the tests were taken, and that was the soonest that it was taken by the health department.
So there were no tests taken until the 28th?
Well, we sample inside the plant to make sure that we meet all of our discharge requirements for all the water leaving the plant through the outfall line. And even during the spill, we met all of our standards and all of the requirements for discharge to the ocean. Now, we're talking about the water that spilled in the lagoon, went into the creek, and went out with we don't need because it's drainage water through our system there. But also, in the case of when a sewer backs up, sometimes it can actually lift the manhole a little bit.
Mm-hmm.
And by locking that manhole, that prevents it from lifting up. So
okay.
The ones that were suspect like that, we have locked. And those ones are back in private property. And those areas like an ag field, we've also locked those.
All righty. The final one was... there's been, I know the most recent story out was dealing with errors no omissions insurance, and I know that had something to do with some kind of not a spill, but a chlorination issue or something. Can you talk a little bit more about that? Let us know where you are on all of that now.
Well, I don't read that article, but the chlorination issue, we've had consistently... adequate and passable tests on our chlorination for a long time now. We've not had an issue like that.
So
I'm not sure what you're referring to, really.
Do you have E&O insurance?
Do I personally? Yes, our firm has E&O insurance.
Okay. And so I guess what the article had said was that it had been denied due to some kind of a spill or some kind of a measurement issue.
No, it's not true, and I'd be happy to talk to you in more detail about that. But that's inaccurate, and I'd be happy to go into more detail with you later on.
Okay, thank you.
Those are all your questions?
Yes.
Councilmember Bright.
Thank you. I have a couple. One is to follow up on what's been done to reduce the chance of a future spill.
Yes, ma'am.
The standard and emergency operating procedures, you said that they were updated. Can you elaborate on that a little bit? I'd like to know how long it's been since they had been updated. Can you answer that for me?
I don't know the precise answer to that. I know that our emergency operating procedures, with all of our phone call lists and so forth, were there at the plant, and we did make all the necessary phone calls that were made. But as you know, those kinds of manuals need to be updated from time to time. And we've really looked at ours and says, well, we know that we could improve it. And we've gone to a lot of effort to make that happen. And Mr. Farrar from the city of Arroyo Grande has considerable experience in state emergency operation manuals. And so he has helped the district out by providing some guidance on those types of manuals, and so we've made that those corrections and those updates that give us a better product.
So would you say then it's a completed project then?
It's still under final review, but it's almost complete.
Okay.
But it's very workable. It's just some of the appendices and so forth that we're filing.
Okay. Thank you. Then I had one other question. Oh, I know. Yeah. Regarding... Oh, sorry, I've lost my train of thought here. But you had indicated that you believe that the state has overstated the water board's fine and volume calculations are grossly overstated and lack basis.
That's
so
true.
Of course, my concern is what the outcome's going to be. I mean, we're going to have this big fine or whatever.
Yeah.
So do you feel that you have information that is going to be viable towards reducing the calculations that the water board has put forth?
We do, and we've worked very hard on that. We've subjected that to outside review. We believe that when the facts are known and presented to the water board, that it will be, I think, very overwhelming evidence in terms of what the correct spill volume was and what the fine should be. But we don't have any way of predicting what may happen at the water board hearing. If they don't look favorably on our request to reduce that, then there's always an appeal process to the state and
okay.
to court later on.
All right. Okay, but you feel that you've got some sufficient documentation that possibly might aid in that reducing that fine?
We've spent probably a year and a half going through that with them, and we believe that they have some substantial problems with their analysis.
Okay. All right. Thank you.
Councilmember Molnar.
Yes, thank you. Mr. Wallace, going back to the issue of the insurance, I read the same article that Councilmember Peterson was referring to, and you may currently have insurance now, but my question is, did you have insurance at that time?
That kind of insurance is not applicable to my relationship with the district as the administrator for the district. The maintenance on those valves, and one of the valves was inadvertently left closed. And during the event itself, the staff had to open that valve in order for the pump to pump all of its capacity. And they were unable to get it open all the way before the wastewater came up so high in the influent structure there, which I think you've seen, that they had to abandon that effort until the headworks could be pumped down and the valve opened all the way. But I think the important point was at least that diesel pump was there and it was working to mitigate what would have been a pretty serious event.
Okay, and then there was an electrical system failure.
Mm-hmm.
I also read somewhere that said that there had been concerns about some of the electrical components at the plant that the Water Quality Regional Board had recommended be repaired and had not?
Well, I don't recall the Water Board recommending that they be repaired. What we normally have is a maintenance program, as you know, where we go through and replace various components throughout the plant when they're at the end of their useful life. In this case, we had a reconductoring program going on to replace some of the wiring. And the wiring is waterproof, so it wasn't a matter of the wires getting wet because they had a waterproof coating on them. But in this case, floodwaters entered the plant, came down through a conduit, and shut off all four of our influent pumps at one time. And the staff at the plant worked very hard to get those pumps going again, and when they couldn't, then they turned on the diesel pump.
All right. Well, based on everything you've said, it seems to me that probably this spill or this problem was preventable if the valve had been in its correct position. I'd also understood that there was a problem with the diesel pump.
Well, the diesel pump was, from a technical standpoint, had an automatic shutoff that would shut off every hour, and then we would fire it back up again very quickly within a minute or two. And later on, we found out what the problem was, and that's been corrected.
Okay.
But you don't know what that is until you go through that kind of a stress because you don't have enough water coming in the plant under normal circumstances to utilize that pump at full volume.
All right, thank you. And then one other question. If it's possible, so that I understand your relationship to the plant and the public, what is basically your position with the sanitation district, and what are your responsibilities?
Okay, I'm the district administrator, and I have overall responsibilities for the overall administration of the plant. I'm not an operator. We can't do operations because only licensed operators could operate, as you know, as certified by the Water Board. But I'm like a city manager from that standpoint. The city manager doesn't operate your pump stations or your water valves out here, but he oversees the overall administration of the city, just as I do for the district.
Then I have misunderstood. I thought you were also chief engineer.
I am district engineer as well. That's correct.
Okay. So then the overall running, the daily running of the plant is ultimately your responsibility then? Because of the people who work under you, if you are the administrator and the district engineer?
Well, again, we don't operate. I don't operate.
No, I understand. You explained that.
But we administer the overall policies and practices of the district. We administer the personnel items that come up. We also deal with things like water board correspondence and things of that nature. But basically, my responsibilities are twofold, one from the engineering standpoint and one from the administrative standpoint.
Okay. Then in regards then to, I'm sorry, another question. In regards then to the hearing that's coming up on September 7th,
yes, ma'am.
Is this going to require legal counsel?
Yes.
All right. And has the expenditure for this been brought to the board for approval for spending the money?
Yes, ma'am.
Okay. And I guess that's it. Mr. Mayor, though, are we going to have a comment section later?
Well, this is just a presentation, so we're receiving this. So if you have a comment that you'd like to make, why don't you make it? So what I'm going to do is see if there's any other questions. And I do have one speaker request to speak. And then we can come back if you'd like to make a comment then.
I'd appreciate it. Thank you.
Okay. Mayor Pro Tem Nichols, you have anything? Okay. Well, there's been some really good questions asked, and I guess that's the great thing about going last is people typically ask all your questions. But I did want to ask you, John, there's a couple of things. And the first is, I think, just to be clear, the September 7th meeting and the objective at that meeting is to see if you can get the board to lower the fine that has been formed them on these various points you're presenting to us tonight?
Yes. I mean, the objective is to come to you folks as well as our other member agencies to make these kinds of presentations. I've extended at each one of these presentations an offer to conduct tours of the plant, which I think is very good for folks to see firsthand what we're talking about and the nature of the plant, what it does and how it runs down there, so we can explain better there. But I'll be happy to come back from time to time to give you an update as we get towards the September 7th hearing. I've also offered to speak at different service clubs and community groups and that we know might be interested in this topic here.
Very good. And I do have one more question. And I didn't give staff a heads up on this, but I'm just wondering, because I recall the city of Pismo Beach many years ago was fined, and I think this was in advance of their newly constructed facility.
Right.
Do you recall, was at that time, were they able to lower their fines and then whichever one stuck? I thought they were able to utilize those monies to go into the new facility.
The best that I can recall about the amounts, I think they finally settled for about a third of what the water board wanted in those fines, and they were able to use a large portion of that fine towards improvements.
Okay. Very good. Thank you, John.
Okay.
So I do, this is a presentation, but given that this is some really good information, and I do want to allow the public an opportunity to speak, I have one speaker request form, and this is from Brad Snook. So, Brad?
Thank you, Mayor and Council, for taking my comments tonight. Thank you to Mr. Wallace for including Surfrider in ongoing stakeholder efforts towards water recycling. Surfrider feels that a viable project can be developed, but along the way there's going to be some difficult questions that have to be answered. The district as a whole, as far as the project towards recycling, we're about finding good ideas. Good ideas will benefit the community in the long run, the district in the long run, and we want to make sure that the Wallace Group doesn't have a stranglehold on the district moving forward, and so other people who have good ideas will be included as well, and we hope that's be a part of the stakeholder process that we bring into the discussion. Now, about the cost for the district, you might think the low cost, you get what you pay for. Okay, so people in the community need to know that that plant was built in 1966. There are going to be issues. Along with those issues, they have all kinds of issues with the board of directors of the sanitation district. After the release of the fine from the water board, news came out on a Monday that there was a $1.4 million fine. Before the Wednesday sanitation district meeting, it was canceled. It was rescheduled for the following Wednesday, and it was held at 4:30. That's a time when most people can't go because they're still at work. The meeting that's supposed to be held this coming Wednesday was canceled in favor of a meeting that will be held tomorrow night instead. So what you have with the sanitation district right now is kind of a shell game as far as taking a public comment. And along with the sanitation district and the board of directors right now, what you have is kind of a pseudo public agency that has a lot of private interest mixed in it. And you want to be able to separate those costs so the people in the district know what they're paying for. Are the people in the district paying to protect the interests of the Wallace Group, or are they paying to protect the interests of the district? A few points. Did the sanitation district vote to authorize the hiring of another lawyer and to continue on to a hearing with the water board? This is important as a public agency. Did Grover Beach's sanitation district representative inform the board about insurance problems? I was here for the meeting when they asked, who's going to pay for the fine? I don't know. The thing is that once they became knowledgeable about the insurance issue, that should have been brought back to the council so that people would get a heads up what's coming for when the community starts asking the question, who's going to pay for the fine? Still unanswered. Can do better. Did the representative educate you about the water board's claim and how to find out more about what the water board was doing and how they came up with their calculations? Education issue. Did the representative brief you on the outcome of the sanitation district's peer review When Surfrider was asking for an investigation last year, the peer review was the only thing that the district agreed to do.
President and Surfrider member, it's always a pleasure to come and speak to the council and the mayor, and we're glad that you're here listening. I was here a year ago, approximately. Hard to say. This article is dated June. Sewage spill was likely preventable. And of course, I'm not here to speak about the liability issues with how much is going to get fined. There's going to be a fine, whether it's one number or another number. Actually doesn't really make all that much difference. It's more about the liability of who's responsible for paying that fine. It's my opinion personally, and it's our opinion in Surfrider, that the three members of the SLO CSD are not the bodies responsible for paying this fine, whatever it ends up being. Gover Beach, OCSD, Aurora Grandy, City of Aurora Grandy. What has happened in this event, a sewage spill in Oceano following heavy rain. Well, heavy rain, when you see that heavy rain coming down on the radar, everybody watches TV, the weatherman says, there's lots of rain coming. Well, you double check, you triple check, you check your manual to see what your manual says about how you are going to handle this spill. And if there was a valve that was closed because of a closed quote, because of a closed, this is from Cynthia Lambert's column on June 3rd, 2011, because of a closed discharge valve, a pump was not able to push the raw sewage quickly enough through the plant. If it had, the probability of sewage spill would have been very low. Those people still have been flooded by the creek waters, but it wouldn't have had sewage in it. If it had, Sanitation District Administrator John Wallace said Wednesday he believes the valve was inadvertently left closed after maintenance had taken place at the plant. Quote, John Wallace, I'm not sure how that happened, he said. Well, I don't know, but how can you not know how a valve that should have been open was closed when, if you double-checked, triple-checked, and quadruple-checked, when you saw the rain coming down at you, that wouldn't have been closed. That would not have happened. So that is not the fault of any of you. It's not the city's fault. It's the plant administrator's fault. It's management's fault. It's the engineer's fault. It's the people who are running that plant. When that fine comes down, the Wallace Group is who's responsible for that fine, not our cities. Not the SLO CSD.
Thank you, Mr. Pynak. So, Mr. Wallace, is there, would you like to have a minute to clarify?
I think that it's easy to make some generalized statements in these regards, and I apologize for responding in this way, but I think any electrical or mechanical system fails from time to time. Who hasn't had a car that is supposedly in good shape that hasn't failed, even to the attention of the owner as well as the best mechanics that they take it to? And in this case, I think that the Surfriders have really misplaced their comments. It's like any other administrator or manager of an agency. If there is a pump station or lift station here in this town or in San Luis Obispo or the county that fails, it's not the director of public works that's directly responsible for that. It's mainly the folks that operate and maintain the plant. And I'm not saying that we couldn't improve ourselves. We have done that substantially, and we've learned some lessons. But again, this is the first spill in 25 years. I don't think anybody else has that kind of a record to this date, in this county and in surrounding counties. So I think it was a very isolated event under a declared emergency with very strenuous times going on in the plant. And we've had rainfall before down there, and we've been able to cope with it. But in this particular case, because of an electrical failure, it was a very untimely event that caused this spill. So I think that when all the facts are taken into consideration, I hope some of these generalized comments will be tempered. Thank you.
Thank you, John. And I want to say thank you for the presentation. Thanks for all the questions up here and for the comments. And this is the whole point of this presentation is to get that update. And so Mr. Wallace is here at the request of myself, and the council had wanted information, and the Mayor Pro Tem asked him to be here. So this is providing information to our community. There's been some good questions that we passed on to the board themselves. So this is just a presentation, and we're going to...
That what has happened, much is preventable, but also there has been a lack of communication to this council. And I feel that, for example, we were never given the peer review until it was asked for. That should have been forthcoming. I know that in closed session that our representative has been involved in contractual agreements, legal agreements, financial agreements, and I believe that this should have come to us as a council in closed session, and that he did not have the authority to make those decisions which affect so many residents that are here and that are listening. And so I ask that we place on the agenda tonight the changeover of our representation, because we need to have somebody who is going to communicate to us exactly what is happening with the sanitation district. And I want to know if others on this this board is willing to do this tonight.
City Attorney.
Thank you, Honorable Mayor, Council Members. In order for the council to agendize an item that is not posted on the agenda, there are certain requirements that need to be met. In addition to the urgency that has to be met, first of all, the information has to be new, and it would not be in the possession of staff at the time of preparation of the agenda. Secondly, this information need to be had by staff and then presented to council between the time the agenda was posted and the meeting. Thirdly, there has to be some reason why that agendized item. Proposed agendized item cannot be agendized at the next meeting. In other words, if the two-week span or however often the body meets will create some reason to jeopardize the situation or in some way jeopardize the interest of the city, either financially or otherwise, then there is the urgency. In addition, it needs to be a supermajority vote to put the item on the agenda.
Okay. Thank you. Thank you for your input. And does anyone else have any comment on that matter?
I have a couple of things.
Yes.
I think I would go along with it being put on the next agenda, and I there was one item that you said that I can't remember all the things you said, but I think that it falls within the definition of it could go on the next agenda. I did, however, have three more questions that came up after the discussion, and I think while Mr. Wallace is here, if I could ask those, I would feel more comfortable, too, about where we move forward. So
okay.
I know that's...
You have the floor.
Thank you. I'm wondering if there has been any determination yet who's going to pay for the fine if it is levied, how it's going to be covered.
The proposed fine is levied against the district.
Okay.
As a public body.
And then you had mentioned that you are the administrator and the district engineer, not the licensed operator. So who is the licensed operator?
There's all of the folks there at the plant are licensed operator, varying in grade. The plant superintendent is Bob Barlogio. He was not there at the time of the spill.
Okay. And then Surf Riders mentioned that there were several meeting changes. Were those noticed?
Yes, they were all noticed in accordance with the Brown Act and the timing requirements. There's no attempt to avoid public attendance at our meetings. Those meetings in particular were scheduled because of predicted absence of some of our board members. And so the meeting was moved to accommodate those folks that would be out of town at the time that our normal meeting would have been held.
And then the final question, going back to the Arizona Missions Insurance, as an administrator, you said that you don't require it. However, isn't the Wallace Group the primary contractor for doing most of the work on the
plant?
Yeah. The Wallace Group is the engineer, the district engineer, in terms of the contract. I'm the district administrator in terms of the contract.
So is the Wallace Group required to have errors no mission insurance?
Yes, ma'am. But that's for the engineering side of the business. It's just like your insurance that you have through your insurance agency here for the city. Your council is protected by your agency insurance as well as your city manager and other staff. So it's the same type of arrangement where CSDRMA is our insurance company, and they insure the district and its officers and employees.
So at the time of the spill, did the Wallace Group, as the engineers, did they? I guess what I'm trying to get at is it's all a little bit confusing.
Yes, ma'am.
Did everybody have insurance at the time of the spill? Did everybody, the engineers, the board, was everybody properly covered at the time of the spill?
The district itself was covered. In terms of the exact coverage, I would ask our attorney to explain that to you.
Yeah, it's not so much exact, but did
everybody... that other insurance through CSDRMA for myself in my administrative duties.
Thank you.
Okay, so we've covered this item, and I know that Councilman Monar has made a comment. Let me just say at this point, we are getting information. I am not here to assign blame. We have a clear path of how this will be addressed in the future. The issue of fines are being addressed now, and we'll see what the meeting of September 7th. And I'm not going to agree with an urgency item placed on an agenda tonight. I don't know how the rest of you feel about that. Karen?
Well, I don't think that the urgency part is necessary at this point in time. We've tried so many times. We've had this discussion so many times about changing the representation at the sanitation district, and we've never really gotten very far with it. So I would be more than happy to review it again and see where we end up, but it's not something I'd want to do tonight.
Okay.
I don't think that it requires the emergency whatever.
Okay. So then we don't have a consensus to move forward on that. City Attorney.
Thank you, Honorable Mayor and Council Member. Just as a point of clarification, customarily the council did discuss these appointments, but the bylaws provide for the mayor or his designee to sit on the district board.
Okay, very good. So I think we've got a consensus that we're not going to put anything on the agenda tonight. We've got a very full plate. So let's move on. And we're going to move into public communications. This is an opportunity for any member of the public to address the council for a period not to exceed 3 minutes total on any items of interest within the jurisdiction of this council. I do want to just state that I've been pretty liberal in allowing folks to go beyond 3 minutes, and I'm asking you as a courtesy if you can limit your comments because I've still got a full chamber who obviously there are two items on the agenda later, so out of respect with them as well. So. Is there any member of the public that would like to address the council during public communications?
Liz Dukas-White, North Grover Beach. I have spoken many, many times in the past before the Grover Beach City Council on the specific complaint regarding 691 Atlantic City Avenue, an illegally modified single-family residence into a duplex that still exists as it was 3 years ago to this day. This issue is now coming upon 3 years of my many endeavors for returning this dwelling into a single-family residence as per original occupancy permit. I've made many, many complaints verbally in writing to the City Council who represents me in open session before the board, this board, the Building and Planning Department, the City Manager, and the City Attorney. I've even filed numerous criminal complaints regarding this issue with this very same council, and then further sent on June 5th of this year the criminal complaint via certified mail to Bruce Buckingham, Bob Peralt, and Martin Kozanowicz. Quote, in an email from City Attorney Kozanowicz, I expect to follow shortly a more detailed response with an explanation and Municode references in my next email, which I have received none. I have not heard anything from this city or its representatives as to the specific issue of one unit versus two units. which per your own zoning regulations does not allow for two units in a single-family residential neighborhood and is not allowed in the R1 zoning without an owner-occupied granted unit conversion. All that has been expressed is that the land be under one lease/rental agreement, which a lease agreement has nothing to do with the physical structure itself. I am requesting and would like to know if any persons in this room know anything about the still outstanding Building and Planning Department complaint and the fact that 691 Atlantic City Avenue is still being marketed as a viable, rentable piece of property without any significant modifications made. Does anyone on this council have any current investigative information regarding the duplex status of 691 Atlantic City Avenue?
Were those your comments, Ms. Dukas?
That's my comments.
Okay, thank you.
Excuse me, Mr. Mayor.
Just one sec. I didn't want to make sure that she didn't have any other comments.
Well, I want to know what's going on. It's been three
okay.
years.
Thank you.
Okay.
Yes,
I don't know
Warner.
If this is the appropriate time to discuss this, but I would like to discuss this at one time this evening because I do have some information concerning that property, and I would also like to discuss the planning code for that.
Okay. Duly noted. And so, Bob, I do want to ask the question of, has there been a formal complaint filed on this property, and is it under investigation?
Yes, there has been formal complaint
matter, and the owners and the property manager were noticed, and they evicted both tenants, as far as I know, or they evicted one, the other one moved out. Last I know, it was being rented or out for rent as a single-family residence.
Okay. So then later we'll have, if there's more discussion, but let's keep, we need to move. This is public communications. Was there anyone else? Okay. Seeing none, I'm going to close it and bring it back to the council. So.
We're standing up. Oh, this item or public communications?
Okay. Do you have something like you would say during public communications? Okay.
Good evening. My name is Elizabeth Martin. I'm from the law firm of Lewis, Brisbois, Biscard, and Smith. I am giving you a quick introduction to me. This is consent agenda item number 8. We're the firm that's included in the proposed amended legal services agreement with your city attorney to provide backup work for you. I wanted to introduce myself before you went on with the rest of your agenda. I very much enjoyed meeting your staff. City manager and staff, I hope that we'll be able to work with you. You appear to have a lot of interesting issues going on in your city.
Thank you, Ms. Martin.
Thank you.
Thank you, Mayor. Really quick, my name is Brad Snook from Surfrider Foundation. As the city attorney was stating, it is up to the mayor to decide for the city who will represent the council or the city on the sanitation district. So as we move forward, approaching the agenda item, the people in the community reach out to Mayor Scholes or come and give public comment as to how they feel about the issue, whether they've been tracking the issue over the last year and a half since Surfrider's been involved in this. And hopefully we'll have a reasonable and potentially beneficial outcome for Grover Beach. Thank you.
Thank you, Brad.
And I'll take less than my 3 minutes, too. Jeff Pinak, Surfrider again. I just would like to remind everybody watching, the viewing public, listening public, that Surfrider is a nonprofit organization that was founded in 1984 with the motto that what we want to do is have clean beaches for all, and not only the humans that recreate at them, but also for the ocean environment, including all the animals and everything that lives in our ocean. Of course, when we look at the ocean, we see this big flat blue thing out there, and without the benefit of being a diver or someone who actually is interested in that stuff, we forget about all the dolphins, porpoises, mollusks, you name it, algae, everything that lives in the ocean. And on that point, I'd like to just again address our gratitude to Mr. Wallace for entertaining recycling water. We are of the opinion that there is no such thing as waste water. There is no such thing as wastewater. We have to buy our water. We have to pay for it. It comes from somewhere up in the Sierras and other places. Every single gallon of water that we dump into the ocean irresponsibly through an ocean outfall is not money well spent. We need to be banking that water. John says we have a future recycling program. I hope we do, and I hope it comes sooner in that future rather than later. But what we really need to do is we need to turn that ocean outfall inside in land, and we need to put it on the land and put it back in our aquifers and use it over and over and over again and stop buying new water. No such thing as wastewater. Surfrider, slow.surfrider.org. And you can view our animated movie on the website called The Cycle of Insanity, about the stupid things we do with fresh water. And I also want to remind everybody that Surfrider operates under the CARE kind of logo. We work on ocean issues through conservation, activism, research, and education. Thank you.
Thank you, Jeff. So I'm going to close public communication. And at this point, I know that we've got two other items that are going to be very lengthy, and I think Councilmember Bright had suggested moving item 16 earlier in the agenda. We do have our planning commissioner we want to appoint, and he looks like he's joined by family, have been diligently waiting. So what I would like to do is exercise the prerogative of the chair and move item 16 and take that right now, because I think we can get through this relatively quickly and allow him to get on with the rest of his evening.
Point out that late last week we received a message from Mr. Montalban actually pulling his application. So you have then the one appointment to make tonight with Mr. Rodman being present, and then the council needs to make a determination as to how to proceed with the filling of the second item.
Okay, very good. Thank you, Bob.
And Mr. Mayor, I think I should recuse myself because one of the applicants is a real estate agent who holds his license with me as his broker. So I think there's a conflict of interest.
Okay.
So I'm going to leave for the time being.
Thank you for being very specific on the reasons for your recusal. Okay. So what is the pleasure of the council?
Well, I think my opinion is we should appoint Mr. Rodman right now, and then we can talk about the rest later.
Okay. So do you want to make a motion?
Absolutely.
To that effect?
Thank you. Yes. I make a motion that we accept the screening committee's recommendation to adopt a resolution appointing Rod Rodman to the four-year term expiring on May 31st, 2006.
Dean.
And that we introduce Mr. Rodman to the council and members of the audience.
I second that.
Okay.
Yeah. What did I say?
Say 6 or 16?
I don't know.
Well, I seconded with the change to the 16.
So we understand the term. It's a four-year term, and so the motion is through the 16th. That is correct. So we have a motion, and we have a second. If there's no additional discussion, roll call.
Yes.
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 Yes. The motion carries 4-0. And let's see. Ron, why don't you come on up? Let's introduce Ron Rodman to the council, to staff, and to the community. So would you like to have a word?
I'd just like to thank the mayor and the city council for this opportunity to serve this wonderful community of Grover Beach. Thank you very much.
And as we said in the interviews, we really appreciate you volunteering your time, because we know that volunteers are really what make this community special. So welcome to the Planning Commission. We look forward to, and I'm sure John looks forward to working with you.
Yes. Thank you very much.
Very good. Thank you. And so then with the... So with the withdrawal of Mr. Montalban's name, then we have to decide how we want to go forward in filling that particular seat. And is the council interested in flying, requesting more applications, and then going through the similar process?
I think I would be more comfortable with that, being that this process I did several weeks ago, and... I'd prefer to do that rather than go forward from here.
Okay. Sounds good. Okay, staff, you have direction?
Yes.
Okay, very good. Okay. So I know everyone's been waiting patiently for this next item, but I'm going to ask you to wait just a little while longer, because we need to take a... So, David, you're just back in time, and was looking at taking maybe a 10-minute break.
Okay.
You do that. Okay, we're going to take a 10-minute break, and when we come back, we are going to jump right on item number 4. So. We're going to reconvene the Grover Beach City Council meeting on Monday, July 16, 2012. And we are now going to go into our public hearings. This is item number 4 on the agenda. This is for the consideration of a proposed charter ballot measure. City Manager Perrault.
Yes, Mr. Mayor, members of the council. As the council is aware, this is the third public hearing we've had on this by the local electorate. A charter enables the city to have a greater control over what is considered to be municipal affairs. And to give you some examples of what municipal affairs are, they include the initiative referendum process and procedures, local elections, city contracting, bidding, and purchasing procedures, land use, local land use and zoning issues, to name a few. But they differ from those items which are considered to be of statewide concern. And to give you some examples of that, that includes the vehicle registration, licensing of trades and professionals, the Brown Act, open meeting laws, school systems, environmental laws, and regulations. The draft charter that you'll be considering tonight is the product of the previous two public hearings, at which time the council took both public testimony and had a great deal of discussion amongst yourselves. I do want to point out that the charter as drafted has been drafted to address those local municipal affairs that the council indicated a most strong interest in having the authority to do so. So the new charter will provide for the following if the council approves it to move forward, and if it is subsequently voted on in November. Residency requirement of 6 months prior to election for all city council candidates. Currently, state law only requires the residency requirement, I believe, of 14 days. Enables the city to establish its own contract purchasing and bidding procedures as opposed to following state rules and requirements. As you know, as you may know, by taking a look at, for instance, the public contracts code, it's quite extensive and can oftentimes be very cumbersome, especially in dealing with smaller projects. The fact that we would be able to, with this legislation, to with this charter, to be able to modify the bidding procedures, purchasing procedures, et cetera, to address local needs and is considered to be a value to the city. The draft charter also would, as presently written, would exempt itself from prevailing wage requirements for locally funded projects that are not of statewide concern. As I've pointed out before, that means that projects that involve both federal and state funding would still require prevailing wage as it has in the past. I also would like to point out that at the time being, those state and federally funded projects or assisted projects make up the majority of the public projects we're doing. The again, as noted, the draft would support local purchase and bidding options. That would mean you'd have the opportunity to focus bidding opportunities to the local community if the council desires. The new charter would support the use of volunteers for local municipal projects. Again, this is considered to be important. In the past, the state has tried to limit the use of volunteers for local construction projects. This would prevent the state's ability to interfere with the use of volunteers in the future. The charter would provide a policy statement regarding the involuntary reduction of city revenues by another entity. As I've noted in the past, this is a policy statement that would allow the council to have some bench to rely on in the event that further revenues are removed by the state or any other entity, and the city might at some point be forced to take legal action. The charter also provides a policy statement limiting the implementation of unfunded state mandates. It's not a guarantee, but would allow us the ability to at least say no on occasion to the state. The city would have the authority to process any number of general plan amendments in any given year. Current state law limits general plan amendments to three processed per year. Now, looking at, as to what the charter does not do. The charter serves as a firewall between the city and the state to prevent further erosion of local control. The charter enables the city to operate more efficiently with greater control over its own bidding, purchasing, and contracting procedures, and it also, and in a related fashion, assists in the preservation of local tax revenues for local tax for local uses. How does that do that? Well, obviously, if you're able to save local resources, either through the bidding procedure or the judicial use of prevailing wage, you're able to protect those revenues for additional public projects or other city uses. There are disadvantages with the charter. I want to be very clear. It is not a panacea. The charter will not wholly protect us from intrusion from the state. The passage of a charter signifies a strong effort on the part of the city to assert its own independence from the state. Only time and the city's ability to weather future state challenges will ultimately determine the charter's success. Another disadvantage is the prevailing wage limitation only applies to locally funded projects, which today constitutes less than 20% of the city's total project cost in current CIP. Essentially, thus far, as I've indicated, you've conducted two public hearings. This is the last public hearing that you're required to conduct before you make a determination on regarding the placement of this ballot measure on the November ballot. Should make a note that this is also an opportunity for the council still to make any changes that you would like to. If determination is made to place on the ballot, staff is recommending that you adopt the necessary resolutions because time is of the essence. Now we're getting close to the end when we need to present this information to the county if the council wishes to proceed. That, in essence, completes my staff report. I'm available for questions.
Thank you, City Manager. Good staff report. Let's see if there's any questions. First to my right, Councilmember Bright, you have any questions?
You know, I don't have any questions at this time. Thank you.
Mayor Pro Tem Nichols?
Not at this time.
To my left?
No.
No?
I actually just have two.
Councilmember Moner.
Excuse me. If this goes forward to the voters, mm-hmm. how do they acquire a copy of the charter for them to look at to make their decision on?
Well, a couple of different ways. Number one, and the city clerk can help me with that, but the charter would most likely be published along with the election materials, and there would also be arguments to and in favor and against the item in the ballot materials as well.
And additionally, a copy of the charter would be available at City Hall for anybody who wants to and on the website.
Okay. And then if we left out Section 302, prevailing wage, does that mean we can't, as a city, we couldn't decide not to use prevailing wage? Does that have to be here?
If you remember, if you take a look at that language, I believe the last part of that language indicates that the council still has an option by resolution to require a prevailing wage at any given time.
Oh, wow.
The removal of that section from the charter
oh.
would put the city under state law and would require...
That's correct.
Okay, thank you for answering that question.
Okay. And so, Bob, I did want to ask you, I know that you said basically the timeline is very slim, so tonight if there's some discussion and there are some amendments or modifications to the proposed charter, would there be time to make those changes, and would the council need to be very specific in wording, or how would that work?
The preference would be that they be very specific in the wording, because the more time we have to get this to the city clerk, the better it will be. I mean, the county clerk. But the deadline for county clerk to receive information is, I believe, is it early August? So there would be time for an additional special meeting. Our next meeting of the council is not until August 6th.
Okay.
In theory, Mayor, council members, we could put this item in front of you again on the 6th if absolutely necessary, recognizing that we have a very, very short deadline to get it.
Gotcha. Okay. Thank you. Since we...
New York. It was passed by Congress and signed into law by Herbert Hoover on March 3, 1931. It came about when a contractor from Alabama built the Veterans Hospital in New York. The workers from Alabama were paid very low wages and were found sleeping in public places, looting stores in the community, and because of their wages were so low, there was not enough support. The wages were not enough to support them in that area, and the quality of work was poor. The law was passed to protect the community and the workers. An important determinant of quality in the construction industry is labor. Prevailing wages are a way to encourage quality. One way is to offer wages which are sufficient to attract highly skilled workers who are capable of producing a quality product. This is what prevailing wages does. The law is essential to prevent government from depressing the local economy and wage rates. Construction is a time and material industry. Low bid requirements on projects would allow contractors from out of the area to bid and win work based on substandard wages and help create the situation where contractors literally import low-wage workers from around the country rather than use of the local workforce. By using prevailing wage standards, this creates a level playing field on which contractors compete for work based on wages that prevail in that area rather than rewarding the practice of slashing workers' wages in order to win work. Prevailing wages basically guarantee that contractors won't take public money, then pay workers below market rates for their labor. And DIR regulations, it's California Administration Code, Section 16100, says that the prevailing wage rate shall be the single rate paid the greatest number of workers in that particular craft in that locality. The DIR surveys each area, each county, to determine that rate. And in Dr. Peter Phillips' study, he found the consequences of repealing prevailing wage rates are construction workers' wages fell, construction training dropped by 40%, occupational injuries in the construction rose by 15%. And without prevailing wage laws, you have no idea what that contractor is paying his workers. I remember that the last there was a comment that we wouldn't let anybody pay him $10 an hour. You have no idea what they would be paying them. They just give you a bid. And you also have no control over apprenticeship training because there's no requirements without prevailing wages. So not paying prevailing wages, it's bad for the worker, it's bad for the public agency, and it's bad for the community. Thank you.
Thank you, Steve. Duke Sterling followed by Wayne Hazarot.
Good evening, Honorable Mayor, City Council, and staff. My name is Duke Sterling, and I'm located in Grover Beach. I'm here tonight in support of a ballot proposing a city charter for Grover Beach. I feel this is a responsible thing for us to do as a city. I understand that only a portion of the city charter is the ability to pay market wages rather than prevailing wages on certain jobs. My wife and I just started another project in Grover Beach, and we pay all of our contractors, local contractors, very fairly. If we had to pay prevailing wages, we probably would reconsider the projects that we're currently doing. It doesn't seem fair to me that the city should be subject to this. I would like to end by saying that I recently had a contractor in my office and who does do prevailing wage jobs, and we talked a little bit about the charter city. He told me that they don't do very much prevailing work anymore, and he understands why. He said that he understands how people can't pay that large difference between what would be fair wages and prevailing wages, and also all the other requirements that are required of a prevailing wage job. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Sterling. Wayne Hazarot, followed by Michael Seaman.
Hello, and thank you for your time. I'm Wayne Hazarot, and I'm here because I want to tell you that in 1995, I was proud to be a first-time homeowner here in Grover Beach because I have a good-paying job as an operating engineer. And as an operating engineer and a wage earner, I've been able to put money back into the communities that I've lived in, and others who make good wages are also able to put their money back into the community. If prevailing wages are eliminated, that'll create an underclass of people that don't make the kind of money that I make. They won't be able to put money back into the community, and you know, who knows where they're going to be taking their money to, but a well-paid worker is able to put money back into the community. The money cycles through the community and furthers the community, the individual, and everyone. So that's why I think we've got to keep the prevailing wages going. Thank you,
Mr. Hazarot. Mr. Seaman, followed by...
Unfortunately, he's very, very smart, and he got accepted with academic honors, but no scholarship. So I have to pay for that. And unfortunately, the only way I can do that is to make prevailing wage, to make a decent living. I've been around a long time. I've seen the difference of, you know, people that are trying to survive on. The gentleman mentioned fair wages. What are fair wages? I don't think $12, $15 an hour is enough to live, support a family, buy a house, make a car payment, you know, provide things for your family, including education. So to me, a fair wage is prevailing wage. I mean, we are middle-class Americans trying to survive here, and that wage is a fair wage. And if we get that taken away from us, we're going to have a hard time living in the state of California. You're going to see people leaving and going to other states where they can't afford to buy a house and support their family on much lower wages, lower housing costs, and that's my feeling on it. So I hope that you take great consideration in your decision here tonight about keeping prevailing wage in the area. Thank you.
Thank you. David Baldwin, followed by Walt Mankins.
Good evening, Mr. Mayor, members of the council. David Baldwin, Cement Masons Union. I've been here for the last couple months. I'm going to try not to repeat myself on some of the things we've went over, but just touch on a few things. You know, Steve laid it out pretty nice from the building trades and in the last couple meetings, and I think most of you probably received some of the independent studies that nicely point out everything that we're talking about here, especially with regard to, you know, the city getting the biggest bang for their buck on the projects that they do. And these studies, you know, also show that, you know, projects done under prevailing wages tend to come in with less on-the-job injuries, you know, less cost overruns, and on and on. And that, you know, is kind of the heart of what I want to say. But, you know, I just really want to implore you guys to take the high road. You know, you obviously have a big responsibility on your shoulders, and we all know about the crunch that virtually every city's in right now, especially in this state. But when you end up hurting the people that you're actually sworn to serve, it's sort of I don't know how to phrase it other than it's like fiscal cannibalism or something. You know, I mean, we want to help the people in our community stay here and work and make a living. And I would like to respond to a couple comments from some of the council members from last meeting, because the way this meeting works, you don't really get a chance to respond directly. The first is that the building trades is not opposed to charter city status. That I want to make clear. We work with charter cities right here, some of your neighbors, excuse me, and we're specifically looking at the prevailing wage issue, which hurts skilled craft. Then there were some other comments about that there wasn't enough public comment here, maybe, with the speakers, that everybody here that was opposing the termination of prevailing wages. And that's really simple. If you're cutting the wages of police officers, you're going to see police officers here. If you're cutting the wages of nurses or teachers, you're going to see nurses and teachers here. And if you're cutting the wages of building trades workers, you're going to see building trades people here. I mean, that's pretty simple in my mind. The other thing is that a skilled craftsman in Grover Beach should not get the same rate as a skilled craftsman in, say, San Francisco. Well, and I think Steve mentioned it again tonight, that that's not how the prevailing wage laws are set up. And the guys I represent, cement masons, a cement mason in Grover Beach does not make the same rate as a cement mason in San Francisco under the current prevailing wage. The one thing I haven't heard addressed, and I've brought it up several times, is apprenticeship. And I'd really like you guys to think about that. I think the reason it probably hasn't come up is because I personally can't think of a single good reason to hurt apprentices. I mean, I think everybody can agree on that. We want to train the workforce of tomorrow, and hurting them is, I see my time's running out here, but, you know, hurting them just doesn't make any sense to me. And the last thing I'll say is that, you know, prevailing wage is not a roadblock to your fiduciary responsibility as members of the council. It's the mechanism that you use to be sure that you get the biggest bang for your buck and that you get quality work done on the projects here in the city. Thank you.
Thank you, David. Walt Mankins, followed by Walt French.
Good evening, Honorable Mayor. John, how are you doing? And City Council, how are you tonight? I've spoke before here also on the same topic, a charter city, prevailing wages. It's very dear to our heart to try to retain that prevailing wage. I've been an operating engineer for 33 years, but they retained a prevailing wage when they made that happen. If you can do that, I think we can all agree to cash it in. I've heard a figure tonight of 20%. It doesn't sound like that a lot of money. Discussion up here with the council people the last go-around, it really didn't sound like it was that much money. I'm going to cut it short. What I want to say, too, is I want to thank everybody that's religiously been coming to these meetings, supporting the effort to retain the prevailing wage, and I want to thank the people who are about to. With that, I wish you guys the very best, and please retain our prevailing wages. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Mankus. Walt French, followed by Anthony Wheaton.
Good evening, Honorable Mayor, City Council members, paid staff, and audience. Walt French, 1042 Atlantic City, Grover Beach. The people that work in our community deserve to get a living wage. And previous speakers have been eloquent in stating that, that, you know, if you're making a living wage, you can contribute back to the community. I've been a citizen of Grover Beach since the early 70s. I've been making prevailing wage ever since then. I'm making prevailing wage right now. I was able to raise two children by a couple of homes in this community. Couldn't have done that without the prevailing wage. Now, I understand that, you know, your predicament of being separated from the state, and I absolutely agree that, you know, a charter city with the rights that you would have by doing that would give you that independence. However, if you could just change the issue on prevailing wage, that would cause a lot of things or a lot of problems that you could potentially have in the future to go away. A good example of that, and I heard it spoke about over and over tonight, was a faulty valve at a sewer treatment plant. Okay, I'm with the Plumbers and Steam Fitters Union. We have a specific course on valve maintenance, valve, everything that has to do with all kinds of valves. It's such an elaborate course, it's actually honored by what's called EPRI, which is the Electrical Power Research Institute. Okay, we take our valves really seriously, and it sounds like we wouldn't have an issue with a fine coming up if some of the operators had, you know, had some training or whatever. But when you don't pay into prevailing wage, you won't be paying into apprenticeship programs. Therefore, people won't have the training to work on some of the sophisticated equipment that operates a community. So, anyway, thank you for your time. Appreciate it.
Thank you, Mr. French. Anthony Wheaton, followed by Jim Conway.
Thank you very much, Mayor, Council, community. Thank you. Glad to be here. Really, I just wanted to come up here and say that I am an apprentice for the Cement Masons Union, and I take pride in that. Like before I started this apprenticeship, I've been struggling, and now working for this apprenticeship, it gives me something to look forward to, and making these prevailing wages. Like I was just got with the news that my girlfriend is pregnant, and like getting paid this prevailing wage, like I'm not at a point where I feel unsafe. I feel like I'm going to be able to support my family, and that's a huge thing. So really, I just wanted to come up here as a hardworking man and just take into consideration that, you know, we work out in 100 degree weather. We work out in you know, to build these cities. I'm a part of this community, and you know, I would like to build this community. Thank you for your time.
Thank you for your comments. Jim Conway, followed by Don Savory.
Thank you, Mayor Scholes, council members, staff, and all the attendees here tonight. My name is Jim Conway. Having represented contractors for more than 25 years, I'm currently working as a consultant to a statewide construction labor management trust, proudly representing thousands of contractors and more than 300,000 building trades workers. Our group makes ongoing annual investments of about $100 million in training. and graduates between 90 and 95% of all the construction apprentices certified by the state of California. As you know, we have provided the city with about a dozen academic peer-reviewed studies on the effects of prevailing wages, and hopefully those are in the record. As we have discussed before, I believe that eliminating prevailing wages will encourage better competition. The studies that we have given you will show that the opposite is true. And as we have mentioned, also the proposed exemptions from the public contract code are also of grave concern to our group. You will encourage bad competition. The city will be promoting a race to the bottom in price, and quality, safety, and training will be dragged down as well. In this environment, only the worst competition survives, along with lower morale, lower productivity, project errors, and rework. A vote in favor of this charter is a vote to abandon worker protections and to abandon contractor protections. Please think about that before casting your vote. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Conway. Don Savory, followed by Louis Robles.
Good evening, Mayor and Council. My name is Don Savory. I represent the ironworkers. Some of them live here in the Grover Beach area. I've brought several apprentices in from this area, making their life better. They can afford to live here now. If they hadn't had that prospect to get in our local, they'd be making low wages over here or none. We've been all suffering through this economy. If they hadn't been able to make prevailing wages in between jobs, you know, they work part-time as construction, it wouldn't have carried them through. They wouldn't have been able to pay their rent, and they might have been some of the homeless people. I've seen a lot of guys lose homes already. I don't think we need to be cutting them any further. Another point, just like some of the guys said before, you're going to get people from out of state, Utah, Texas, whatever, bringing illegals in here, whatever, doing shoddy work. You're going to end up paying to do it over. I've seen this time and time again on projects in the valley. That's about all I got to say.
Great. Thank you for those comments. Mr. Robles, followed by Sharon Brown.
Yes, Mayor. Council members and staff, thank you for this opportunity again to speak to you on this matter. I first want to say that I am in full support of Grover Beach becoming a charter city. I believe in your independence, that you stand upon that independence. Yet I question as to why you would want to jeopardize my independence by jeopardizing my wage, the ability to make a decent wage, and the ability to continue to live in this city. I live just down the street from here. That was a question that has sort of been on my mind that I heard. And then in the last discussion, it was also said by one of the council members that it was believed that there was a greater support for those who were not present than from those who were. And that statement kind of puzzled me, because I hope that we do not confuse apathy for acceptance. As, you know, the beauty of democracy is that we show up, and those who do raise their hand and those who do raise their voice are the ones that are counted and the ones that are heard. So I hope that you would hear the voice of these that are in this room. You would hear myself. I enjoy living here. I make a good living here, and there are even some of the contingencies that I know that they're not even union members, but they would like to have the opportunity to make a decent wage too, and to perform work for you. So with that being said, I just want to say thank you to the staff and thank you to the council.
Thank you, Mr. Robles. Sharon Brown.
Before I make my comments, I don't want to come in the middle of prevailing wage argument. If there are more people who want to testify about that segment, I'm willing to wait until they are through. So I don't know how you want to address that.
Well, why don't you go ahead and speak, because I have one last speaker request. And so,
oh, because several signed up after me, so I...
I haven't seen those forms. I tell them we're going strictly by the blue forms.
Which is why I filed a blue form.
As you always do.
Oh, thank you very much. I was not going to speak on the charges early on in January when Mayor Pro Tem was wanting an elimination of term limits, and I see a reference there to it didn't need to be done there. It could wait until the possibility of a city charter was introduced. So it really does go back that far, I'm assuming. I don't know where that came from. But I would like an answer to what the driving force is. I would also like the title read, as it's, you know, because all of a sudden I see, we keep referring to city charter, but what I'm seeing now is home rule. And that struck me as a more palatable or politically acceptable to the public than city charter. So when it goes on the ballot, if it says home rule, it maybe is more likely to pass. Regarding the bidding process, and as I said, these are in no order, I wondered what the state regulations currently are for the size of a project. In other words, does it have to hit the threshold of a $150,000 project before state regs kick in? Because I heard reference made to small projects, and I didn't know what that actually... What is a small project? Also, I would like... Mike, I have a concern, and I don't disagree with this, by the way. I'm all in favor of buying locally, supporting locally. But I'd like the local area to be defined. What do we mean when we say, you know, for bidding? What is that local area? Because it does make a difference. And does it go up as far as San Francisco, Paso Robles, or is it just our segment of the Central Coast, or what? I also would like it to be read by title tonight, because I've never heard it read by title. It's just always on the agenda as city charter.
Okay.
And we just launch. Also, I would like someone to define what kind of beach we are talking about. We want the identification as a beach community. Are we talking North Beach, Manhattan Beach, Miami Beach, West Palm Beach? Are we talking about Pismo Beach, Shell Beach? I don't know what a beach community is.
Okay. Did you?
And then volunteers for construction. Did I?
Okay.
I'm not sure that I heard Councilman Peterson correctly when she said using volunteers for construction.
Okay.
I can see using volunteers otherwise. Yes, and I know I'm running over.
Well, I'm taking copious notes, so Sharon. I've got other people who'd like to speak.
And then the other thing is, it's not just construction, but the charter also says for services. And what kind of services are we talking about?
Okay.
And I think that's as much as I wanted to say.
Thank you, Sharon.
Thank you.
Alex Lansberg.
We've submitted an extensive amount of economic literature on this subject. In fact, the economic case for prevailing wages is a settled question. The only people who seem to doubt it are actually ones whose pocketbook specifically depends on their ability to win work by driving down wages for workers. So we provide specific stories, and these stories just keep getting worse and worse the more you dig into them. Just this past week, the San Diego North County Times profiled the Oceanside debacle with their Harborside Community Center project, and it turns out that their city council member Jerry Kern is still sticking to his contention that paying 65% more per square foot than originally budgeted constitutes a savings. I don't know how that happens, but nevertheless, he is hanging fast to that claim. Second, Palo Alto, the Engineering News Record, the construction industry's record magazine of record, just profiled the fiasco happening in Palo Alto. And again, talking specifically about the millions of dollars in overruns, the extensive delays that are happening because of the people doing the work on this thing. Second point is question of intent versus outcome. It may not be your intent to have to drive down wages down to $10 an hour, Council Member Nichols, but within a competitive
Alex,
bidding environment...
Alex, make your comments directly to the entire
members,
council.
Within a competitive bidding environment, when you tell contractors that they are judged whether or not they are low, and you do not keep wages... on an even playing field, you will find them driving down wages. And that's exactly, you can point back to Oceanside and Palo Alto. And the last thing is, this is going to cost the city. The city of Auburn just had a tentative order to pay $24,000 because they decided to try to shut up some citizens who were arguing against their charter. They already have spent tens of thousands of dollars in other court cases. This is the exact same charter. This is going to end up causing more problems. And if you're going to try to be penny wise, make sure you're not pound foolish. Thank you.
Thank you, Alex. And the final speaker is John Ferrier.
Good evening, Honorable Mayor and members of the City Council. I'm John LaFerrier. I'm here to express my own personal opinions as a Grover Beach resident on the Charter City proposal. I'm not representing the Planning Commission with these comments. I'm supportive of the proposal, and as Mayor Pro Tem said last meeting, many people likely do support issues but seldom come forward to say so. Let me address a few of the points. One of the great things about this podium is the variety of opinions we hear from this spot right here from people participating in the process. Yet I don't believe I've ever heard anybody suggest that we spend less money for street maintenance or perhaps allowing them to turn into a more natural, free-range state. Without the flexibility in our proposed charter, that is what we are choosing. If at some future point the citizens of Grover Beach decide to support a revenue measure for our streets, the prevailing wage requirement will not make these dollars go as far as they should. We'll instead say we prefer doing less for more. This is also true for some of our smaller annual rehabilitation projects. The prevailing wage by no means guarantees quality in all projects. We know that Oak Park Boulevard was paved under that contract structure, as well as the time before that and the time before that. Speakers last meeting opposing the flexibility, one mentioned the cost savings would be minuscule. The fact that you're receiving the full court press tonight as well as that other night is evidence to the contrary that the savings are likely substantial. I believe that staff and council can work together to select the best value bid and keep our local economic interests in focus by using this flexibility in labor contracting when it makes the most sense. This is where the charter's Think Local First option applies. Second quick topic, term limits. While I'm supportive at the state level of some term limits, the same reasons don't apply to many of the local positions, particularly this city council that devotes substantial time for a minimum stipend. The career politician label just doesn't apply. Recent Board of Supervisor elections have had a 50% turnover, which shows that the election process works if we let it. And that is much more of a career position in terms of time spent and compensation received. Whereas Grover Beach is offering our elected officials a minimum wage opportunity, and that's if they're doing their job correctly, as involved as they should be, with no other financial benefits. Thank you for all your for your service under those circumstances. I'm satisfied to allow anybody the opportunity to be freely elected to contribute positively so long as they should desire that arrangement. This topic could be addressed in the proposed charter at this time. I recognize that potato may be too hot for you to handle. Finally, the cost. The $10,000 to $15,000 for this ballot measure is about a buck per resident. Things like this in the construction project and the
processes and procedures to operate more efficiently and hopefully save money. Those were the driving reasons that it was brought forward. The issue of term limits simply would like to address it in the fact that at this point, although there's been plenty of discussion on that issue, at the council level, term limit change right now is not a part of the draft charter. The home rule title, the title itself of the document is really simple. It essentially says, I believe, the city of proposed charter of the city of Grover Beach. There is reference in the last section of the document that says, I hereby affirm that the foregoing home rule for Grover Beach Charter of 2012 was submitted to a vote of the people. So, in essence, the council has the ability to make whatever changes you desire, especially a title would conform. Relative to the bidding limits, the code has a lot of different bidding limits, starting at a floor of about $5,000 and proceeding upward to $175,000 plus. My thinking here is this allows the city essentially to establish whatever kinds of bidding limits it chooses, and so as to position itself to its best, the city's best advantage. Local bidding in the areas that in the ordinances that I've reviewed, this is first of all, the charter is itself an enabling legislation. What it means is that by adopting the charter, the citizens would be saying to the city council, the city council should move forward with the development of bidding procedures and rules and regulations, and that would all subsequently have to come back to the council as a whole. In terms of the local area, I have seen in different ordinances that it can be very specific. Again, that would be ultimately up to the council as to define what local means. Volunteers for construction. In the past, the state has attempted to legislate to eliminate the ability to use volunteers in public construction projects. It's an issue that conflicts with prevailing wage. There was additional state law that was passed that essentially put that provision on hold. It's my understanding that that provision has a couple of years before it sunsets, and the legislature would then be required to either address it or the previous rule would stand. The reason that volunteers is addressed here is simply to prevent the state from having the ability to come in and make rules regarding the use of local volunteers at the local agency. And I think that answers the majority of Ms. Brown's questions.
Okay, and I know she had talked about reading by title. I think you covered that. And I think she had talked about defining the type of beach. I think that's a discussion that the council would need to have. Yes.
There was one other she was saying about not only construction but services.
Yes, you know, they also provide you the flexibility to change basically set up your own local bidding processes or solicitation procedures for services.
So for services or construction.
Right.
Okay. So, City Manager, I've heard several people tonight mention someone had talked about a market wage or a livable wage. Are there any definitions out there? I'm curious.
Well, I'm certain that the information they gave you relative to how a prevailing wage is probably accurate and how it is set. I don't have any immediate information on hand relative to that issue. Obviously, market level, however, is the wages that need to be paid, what the local market will bear. Please remember that construction is a function of not only public agencies, but there is a whole lot of private construction
in place in the larger projects, which requires actually hiring somebody who monitors. There is a whole process for recording the payroll and verifying, and then there's a certification that everybody was paid.
Okay, very good. So let's see if there's questions or discussion. Councilmember Peterson?
No questions.
No questions? Any comments at this time?
No.
Okay. Councilmember Molnar?
Just a couple. I noticed in the charter itself, Section 603, it says that the charter can be revised or repealed or amended. Has any thought come to the fact that if we left out Section 302, we could at a later date, you know, after an evaluation of what has been going on in terms of savings, that could be asked to be put in later?
The process remains the same, and that would really be a staff didn't contemplate that, but certainly the council can choose to include whatever they wish in a charter, and should they wish to amend it at a later date, they would have to go back through this same process, which would mean the three public hearings and ultimately the vote of the people.
Okay. You know, listening to everyone, I thought, well, why isn't there a compromise? You talk about how we're going to set up purchasing and public works contracts, and has there any thought to having something in here that kind of combines both 301 and 302? The concern has been that if there are very minor projects, you know, they could be done in a less expensive way if there was no prevailing wage. Why not a compromise in terms of a ceiling, saying, you know, public projects under 100,000, we would not use prevailing wage. You see what I'm saying? That way, when you have a major project, you know, that requires a lot of skilled help, then you would want to have the prevailing wage. But by saying, you know, by leaving it the way it is, you know, my concern is there are some very good things in this city charter, but it could die because of this one particular, you know, section that's in here. So that's just occurred to me, actually.
Mr. Mayor, the council has the this is still a draft document. The council has the option of drafting the provision of the charter however it wishes. I will point out that again, as I've mentioned, this is enabling legislation, so ultimately the council could, if it desired, address those issues when it put the procedures together, standards together at a later date, but that's a policy consideration for the council.
City Attorney.
Thank you. And also, Mayor and Council members, as proposed, the language of the charter doesn't prohibit prevailing wage profits to be done in the city. It simply says that they are not going to be required. Council, as Councilman Mahler identified, council will always have an option, assuming that this moves forward and is adopted by voters, will always have an option to identify a project or projects and say, this is going to be done consistent with prevailing wage, this isn't going to be done with consistent wage. The charter as proposed simply removes the state law requirement that every public works project is done with prevailing wage.
And so to follow up that thought process, could the council then subsequently, or part of this charter, say there are that basically projects that are solely funded with locally generated funds, if we're saying that they're not subject to prevailing wage, but we do want to say we want, let's say, a successful bidder would need to use employees or workers from a local union within, let's say, 50 miles of the city. I mean, could we be that specific in this charter, or is that later policy?
My recommendation would be that is not language for basically for the constitution, for the law. That would be certainly something that the council can adopt as bidding policies. One of the other provisions here says that if adopted, the charter will enable the city council to dictate bidding provisions and bidding policies. So you will have the ability, assuming that this is adopted, to set up your own set of rules. And if their own set of rules says anything under $50,000 is or isn't prevailing wage and vice versa, certain recommendations with regard to use of workforce, and amend the charter to do that. If you left Section 302 in, you are now, and the charter is adopted, you now have an option to, at a council meeting, to set different rules for different projects or set policies for all bidding projects, etc. Because by leaving it in, and if it is adopted, its effect is to remove the requirement that you must use prevailing wage on public works projects. That requirement is removed then. You then, if you want to, can set up your own rules, or if you want to, you can continue to use prevailing wage. But the requirement of state law, by including in the chapter, is removed. You obtain control over that issue as a city.
All right, thank you.
Okay.
I do have some comments now.
Okay. Councilman Peterson.
I like the comment of compromise, and I think that, I know I said this last time as well, I think that in a sense there's some compromise built in. In fact, in a couple of ways. One is that there are going to be a good number of projects, being the city that we are, where we are going to require federal or state assistance. And in those cases, the compromise will be no compromise in the sense that we will use prevailing wage because we will have no choice. The compromise comes when it's a local decision, and then we have the choice. And I could very well see an issue where perhaps a trusted contractor who we've used time and time again will come to us and they'll say, you know, there's some really specialized stuff here. You need to use the experts. You're going to need to use prevailing wage here. We recommend that it may cost you 10-20% more, but it'll be money well spent. Use prevailing wage and get the right people. And then there may be some cases where that's not going to be required, but I think it leaves the door open to make a choice to spend our money in the way which would be best to get the job done. And I think the choice should be ours. I don't think the choice should be made by the state. And so I I still feel that there will be many opportunities for prevailing wage to be used, and I feel we should have a choice in the few opportunities that we have to, if we can, stretch our dollars, at least to make our choices about how our dollars are spent.
Okay. Come to my right. Councilman.
That was very well said. I compliment you.
Thank you.
Can we talk about any other changes besides prevailing wages?
Yes, you certainly may.
Good. I would like to suggest that under Section 201, I would like to see you change the wording. It says mayor pro tempore. I think we should use the word vice mayor. I say that from the last couple of years that I have served as the mayor pro tem. I would love to be able to count them, but I didn't. The number of times that I have been introduced to people as being from Grover Beach and on the city council, currently serving as mayor pro tem, and people look at me like, oh, what the hell is that? And I mean that seriously. Mm-hmm. And in response to that, many times I have said, well, I'm the vice mayor. Oh, okay, that mm-hmm. explains it. That has happened so many times over the last 2-3 years. So I wonder if there's any reason that we could not change that to vice mayor instead of mayor pro tem if the rest of the council feels as that's appropriate. Is it legal?
City attorney.
Thank you. Mayor, council members, there is no reason not to do that. The only caveat that I would provide you with is that that would mean changing, amending the code, our municipal code, anywhere it says that. You have to change it. Probably some stationery, but that's probably a minor issue. But the terms are interchangeable and they mean the same thing. There is no difference in duties or any other. Mayor pro tem or vice mayor is the mayor in absence of the mayor, and that's, you know, okay, they mean the same thing.
Good. Thank you. I only bring it up because it's happened so many times. I just can't not bring it up. And as far as catching up, as far as the ordinance and other documents are concerned, we could certainly do that at a later date if it were put into the city charter, correct?
I have to say that I usually get tongue-tied trying to figure out. I can't remember mayor pro tem, but vice mayor is easy.
Yeah.
Okay. Is that it?
And one other question I had with reference to Section 301. Where it says that we now have the right. Let me get to it.
I think that we would be doing a disservice to all of the residents of Grover Beach, all of the taxpayers, if we were to limit the city's ability to set policy in this respect. I know acquaintances that work in the public works arena as well as the private sector, and I can say their work ethic does not change, nor does their work product. So I would be, I don't know, the vice mayor, that doesn't make a whole lot of difference to me as far as a change. If it means that we have to change our code and stuff, I don't think it's really significant. So I don't think that that's something we need to do. So I think that if we educate on the people of our town so that they understand what this is and what kind of benefit it's going to give the city, and or potential benefit even, I think we should go forward.
Okay. Mayor Pro Tem, did you think of your other comment?
I found out what the mayor question is, but it was answered earlier. Now that I reread it, so I have no further question.
Okay. Honorable Mayor,
yes.
Council members, if I may, on Section 206, may I make a recommendation that the 2-year minimum requirement be changed to 5 for a someone who will become your city attorney? the yeah. It is up to you, but 2 years out of law school is a short time to gain a lot of experience to sit in a city attorney seat.
Okay, very good. Thank you for that comment. So let me make a few comments, because the last time I probably spoke on everything but the charter. And I did want to say that I think last time I had talked about we needed more time, we needed to talk to residents in this community, and I've been doing that since then. But there's been some other developments that have happened since the last time we met. And I would say that the biggest one is, as everyone knows, we are in the process of dissolving redevelopment. And the state legislature and the governor chose to pass, I believe it was AB 1484, which gives the Department of Finance the authority with no input, because they didn't get any input from local elected officials or League of California Cities. They adopted a law, if dismantling redevelopment wasn't enough, they came back and adopted a law that says if the Department of Finance does not agree that successor agencies have not paid a sufficient amount to meet what they believe were the obligations, then they have the ability to withhold sales and property tax from that agency. So it is an all-out assault from Sacramento on local government. And to that end, we definitely need to find ways to provide greater protections from the state legislature and tools to maintain local control. I still believe that charter city is a good tool, but it must be fair and it must be comprehensive. And I want to address three particular points. And I know there's been a lot of discussion on prevailing wage, but I'm going to go back and talk about elected offices. And I know that Sharon had brought this up and others had talked about term limits. And I'm not a big fan of term limits, to tell you the truth, and I think that ultimately the voters decide who they want to represent them. But I would say that if we are, in fact, trying to create a good tool for governance, that anyone who, as John LeFerrier said, chooses to run for office to be compensated a stipend, they certainly have that right. But where we sit right now with elected offices is that an individual who is on the city council has the privilege, as long as they're voted, to serve 8 years total, meaning 2 4-year terms. The current mayor position right now allows someone who seeks that privilege and is so voted to serve 4 years total, 2 2-year terms. So I would say if we're going to move forward, if we are not going to talk about the issue of term limits, that we talk about the issue of fairness in the offices, this does not affect the current city mayor. This affects future mayors. And can you imagine someone who chooses to run for mayor subsequently and gets elected? It's the same thing in Sacramento where we talk about our state assembly members who run every 2 years. How can they really serve this community? So, you know, I would hope that we would look at making it fair and equitable between the offices. That way, any individuals that come after, and if this charter is either adopt or to go out and promote a law that is patently unfair, that does not encourage the use of local firms and paying people livable wages. And so I had hoped that we could be able to put something like that in this actual charter. And when I was asking my questions earlier about ulterior motives, and yes, I've outed myself, is there really a true compromise situation that says, yes, for projects that are funded with federal and state dollars, we are subject to prevailing wage, and that's 80% of the projects that are done in this community. That does not change. That is not under attack. What we're talking about is how do we have flexibility and control the limited funds that we've got in order to make that money go further in our community. And no, we are not talking about compromising on quality, because I would think procedurally and policy, we need to be talking about surety bonds for performance. We would certainly need to be talking about utilizing the workforce And having companies hire employees that are members of a local trade hall within 50 miles of Grover Beach. You know, I hope that we could legally do that, and more importantly, that we can enforce something like that to have some assurance of that nature. And then the issue of a livable wage, I'm still curious as to what that livable wage might be. I know it's not minimum wage, and I agreed someone talked about it's not $15 an hour. So what is that number? I don't know. So we've got to find a way to protect ourselves from the state legislature, because they clearly it's an all-out assault on local government. And we'll have to see what the council breaks on this, because clearly the big issue that's getting obviously 95% of the discussion tonight is the issue of prevailing wage. So there is a draft charter before us, and let's see, we have to see if the council majority is interested in moving forward with this charter or some amended version of this draft charter, correct?
Okay. I say we move forward.
I agree.
Okay.
Move forward in what way? Are we talking about moving forward, voting with the way it is, moving forward and making changes and coming back? What's moving forward?
So I would say someone should frame a motion.
I think would it not be appropriate to discuss some of the suggestions that have been made this evening, such as in Section 206, the city attorney just made that recommendation.
Mm-hmm.
I would like to suggest that we concur with that. I absolutely agree that it should be 5 years' experience.
I support that.
Yeah, I do.
Okay. So...
Okay, well.
So someone needs to try and frame a motion, and if you want to include those amendments, you spell those out, okay?
Okay, well, I will make a motion that per staff recommendation that we move forward with the draft of the Charter City, and there are some changes that I think need to be made, and I would incorporate those changes if by consensus of the council.
Those being...
Okay, so...
That's the first resolution?
Oh.
Pardon me?
Would that be then the motion on the first resolution? Attachment 2?
Okay.
I don't think you're done yet, though, were you? No?
Well, we can do that first resolution without any changes, correct?
Mm-mm.
The first...
No.
No?
That's adopt the resolution approving the proposed charter, but you want to make the
well, okay, that was my intent then, to go mm-hmm. through these different sections of the charter and make those corrections that the council concurs on. The first one I mentioned was the 2 years to 5 years.
Okay.
So I thought, yeah, I'm good with that.
And then that. Mayor pro tem to vice mayor?
I strongly concur. I can appreciate your comments, but if you haven't been there yet, and when you mention to somebody that you are currently serving as a mayor pro tem, and they look at you like, what are you talking about? And you say, oh, I'm vice mayor. No. Oh, you know, okay, the light
okay.
went on. So that's the only reason I say that. It just makes life simpler for everybody.
Okay, so then your motion, I just want to see if we can move along, mm-hmm. is that the council adopt the charter for placement of... Let's have a roll call.
Yes.
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 No.
I'm going to vote no, because I think this should be a little more comprehensive. So...
I agree.
The motion carries. Were there any... Is that the only item? There's another resolution, correct?
There's actually 4.
That was a resolution.
I'll make the...
There are 3 more resolutions.
Yeah, 3 more. I move that we adopt the resolution adding this measure to the November 6, 2012 ballot.
Okay.
Which one? I'm sorry. I was distracted.
I'm moving the second recommendation by staff that we adopt the resolution adding a measure to the November 6, 2012 ballot. Is that right? Is that worded correctly?
And the resolution has the language for the ballot title, and if that's
the here we go. Resolution of the City Council.
Shall the City of Glover Beach be changed from a general law city to a charter city through adoption of a charter proposed by Resolution 12? Black.
Yes, Attachment 3.
I'm confused. I don't know where we are.
So Attachment 2.
That was the first motion.
Can we please ask the audience to just calm down for a minute?
Can you, if you need to talk, could you please move into the hallway? Okay, thank you. So, Councilmember Peterson is moving adoption of resolution that is included, I believe, as attachment 2. Correct.
It's attachment 2.
I thought 2 was the one I just read.
No, one was the one you
just read.
Okay,
one.
So it is attachment. I don't see it.
So this is adopting the resolution adding a measure to the November 6, 2012 ballot.
Two.
Is that correct? Is that what we're talking about right now?
I initiated the confusion originally by misidentifying the motion that Vice Mayor made was on the first resolution, which is attachment 1.
Okay. Mm-hmm.
So I think that what's left now are attachment 2, 3, and 4.
I don't see attachment 2 in
attachment
my...
Attachment 2 is the resolution authorizing the submission of the qualified electors of the city.
Oh, there it is. Okay. Right. So that's the one I'm moving then. A resolution of the City Council of the City of Glover Beach authorizing the submission to the qualified electors of the city a measure relating to changing from a general law city to a charter city at the general election to be held on Tuesday, November 6th, 2012.
And I'll second that motion.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Thank you.
There's no additional discussion. Roll call.
Councilman Peterson.
Yes.
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 No.
No. Okay, now you've got Resolution 3, which is Attachment 3.
I move that we adopt the resolution setting priorities for arguments and directing the city attorney to prepare an impartial analysis.
I'll second that.
Okay, there's a motion and a second. Is there any other discussion on the motion? Roll call.
Yes.
Yes.
No.
Yes.
Yes.
And then I move finally that we adopt the resolution authorizing rebuttals for a city measure submitted at the general municipal election.
I'll second that.
Okay, there's a motion and a second. Roll call.
Councilmember Peterson.
Yes.
Councilmember
Bright.
Yes.
Councilmember Nyman. No.
Councilmember
Nichols.
Yes.
Yes. Okay, let's move on to the next item on our agenda. This is item number 5. This is the 2012 weed abatement protest hearing.
Yes, Mr. Mayor. Chief is there. He is
still here.
Good evening, Council. Joel Arnaz, Five Cities Fire Authority. Tonight before you is the protest hearing for the weed abatement program. If you recall, the deadline for property owners to abate their properties was June 6th. On June 8th through the 15th, the members of the authority reconnoitered the lots and sent notices to those that still needed abatement. We see how substantially those costs have gone down for each individual property. So if you have any questions on the weed abatement or the protest hearing, I'd be happy to hear those.
Thank you, Chief. Any questions?
I have one question.
Okay, Mayor. Vice Mayor Nichols.
Yeah, Chief, I was just curious where it says, please note the deadline to submit the cost to the county auditor controller's office. Is that which gives them adequate time to put it on the tax bill?
Correct.
Otherwise, okay.
Correct.
That's what I thought. Thank you.
Mm-hmm. Anything? Anyone else? Councilmember Peterson and Monar.
It's so significantly cheaper this year for the four properties that were abated both years. I know you kind of made reference to that, but why is it like 90% cheaper?
Well, we just added the 30% administrative cost. We didn't add the total weed abatement cost that we did last year or the prior years. We didn't do that last year. In 2010, the authority has a $242 fee for lots, and the city had a larger administrative fee also. The way we did lots this year, as opposed to last year or the previous years, we paid firefighters on an hourly basis to go out and patrol the lots and see which ones needed abatement. This year we used the on-duty crews. In previous years we mailed notices to absolutely every property owner in the city of Grover Beach. This year we just mailed notices to those who had vacant lots or weed or nuisance problems. So we cut down our work substantially.
Thank you.
Mm-hmm.
Councilmember Monar.
Actually, that was my question.
Okay. Since seeing no more questions, this is a public hearing. Let me open this to the public. Is there, I don't think I have any speaker request forms on this item. Okay.
Oops.
This is just a general question. I've driven by the vacated court building, and it is just an absolute horror as far as I'm concerned. Who's responsible for maintaining that, and would that be within our purview to go in and clean it up if, I don't know if it's the county or who,
okay.
But my question is, who's responsible for cleaning up the mess that's there?
Okay, thank you.
Good question.
Mm-hmm. Was there anyone else that want to address this item before us? Seeing none, I'm going to close this to the public. And Chief, did you or the city manager want to respond to her question?
If the vacant courthouse is a weed problem, it would be the fire authority. If it is a code enforcement problem, it would be the city of Grover Beach.
Ultimately, the responsibility for maintenance is the county court, and since it is a county-owned facility, it will review the property and contact the appropriate authorities.
Okay. Very good. So if there's no more discussion, is someone prepared to make a motion on this item?
I'll make a motion that we take two actions. You do this all at one time?
Yeah, let's do it all at once.
Conduct the required cost protest hearing, and upon finding no justifiable protest, adopt the resolution authorizing the city clerk to attach weed abatement costs to properties in the amounts listed on Exhibit A for assessment on county tax rolls.
I'll second that.
Okay, there's a motion and a second. If there's no additional discussion, roll call.
Yes.
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 Yes. Let's move on to item number 6. And this is an introduction and first reading of a proposed ordinance adding Chapter 17 to Article 3 of the Municipal Code to add regulations restricting smoking in public places. City Attorney Kazanowicz.
Thank you. Honorable Mayor, Council members, members of the public. This time is before you for your action on a first reading and introduction of an ordinance which would add to the existing state law in the manner in which the city enforces smoking laws. Pursuant to your direction, we have drafted an ordinance which would make it unlawful to smoke tobacco products in a city park as well as on any of the surrounding sidewalks. The exception to that would be the southern side of the Ramona Garden Park, which is the bus transit. That area has a lot of travel traffic. It also has the bus drivers taking their breaks there, and it was staff's recommendation that that area be excluded from the prohibition. Third is 500. It's the usual schedule of citations through the city.
All right, and then enforcement. I can understand that it would probably be easy to enforce this particular ordinance at instances such as the concert series. Would that be who would be there to enforce it? Let's say, because I was at one 2 weeks ago, and there was a gentleman smoking a cigar. It was extremely annoying, and at the time, I really couldn't say anything. So if you pass something, we pass this, would there be somebody there that we could go to and say, this man is smoking a cigar, can you ask him to stop, or how does it work?
Well, there's certainly staff at the concerts. Additionally, and I will not, I'll defer to the chief as far as what the scheduling and deployment of personnel is, but obviously police department would be enforcing these.
Come on up.
Looking for the nod. Basically, what the plan is if this is passed, the information we have from other cities is it's pretty much self-enforced. People are usually pretty good about not smoking in the parks. They haven't had to take a lot of police time to enforce the smoking ordinances. But should that occur, our first steps, especially with like the concert series, is city does have staff that's there, and they do have a security personnel at the event, which would be the first contact that they could complain to any of the staff if somebody was smoking. And if that couldn't be resolved, they would call us in. And then I think it's just a matter of there may be some work initially, but I think it's over a period of time there's some training involved. People will learn that that's not something that's appropriate for those events. And then hopefully it won't take any police presence to handle it.
Okay, because that would be my concern, right, is just to give a warning so that they would know for the future.
Absolutely. And it's not necessarily our intent to go out and start citing everybody. We don't have the staff to do that. But should an incident or repeat incidences or problems occur, then we would definitely enforce the code.
All right. Thank you.
Okay. Councilmember Bright.
Okay, sure. I thought Debbie had a question.
Oh, I'm sorry. Did you?
I can wait.
No. Well, no. I promise you, so you.
Okay. And maybe it is better because I'm hoping maybe for some suggestions or some conversation. On first glance, it seemed really like a good idea to allow some smoking so the bus drivers could take a break and the folks waiting for buses could have a smoke. But then I remembered sitting in outdoor restaurants and being surrounded by smokers on several occasions when I was on vacation. And I find myself thinking, well, why should people sitting at a bus stop have to be subjected to ill health any more than anyone else would? And so I don't know if there's any solution. I understand that there are probably regulations that allow the bus drivers to take a break and have a smoke if they want one, but I'm just wondering if there's any way to allow the people waiting for buses not to have to be exposed to secondhand smoke. I don't know if there's any easy solution to that, but somehow it seems unfair that everybody else gets to be healthy but them.
Well, I'd say if you're at the bus stop at Ramona Park and you've got that protection. Or you're thinking about bus stops throughout the city.
I'm looking at I'm thinking about Ramona Park.
Yeah, I would think, are we not discussing?
Because
I believe the bus stop there is part of the park.
Right, but as proposed, the bus transit area, which is the southern edge of the Ramona Garden Park, would be exempted from the prohibition. I think that following some discussions at one of the council meetings, and also I think staff did some research, where the buses pull in that transit area, a lot of the bus drivers take their breaks, and they apparently a lot of them smoke.
Hmm.
There are a lot of people waiting for buses that smoke. So I think the staff's direction and then consideration was enforcement would be probably far more difficult in that area because you have people who may not necessarily be familiar with the park or with the concert series. And also providing some area that where people who are there for a period of time or who are taking their break from driving would be able to smoke. We're open to drafting whatever the council feels would be a compromise that would work. I don't know that there is a easy specific way of dealing with that issue.
Okay.
Well, that was my thought. I was thinking I am a big proponent of limiting smoking in the parks and so on, but I also believe that there should be a place where folks can go to smoke if they want to, and people on the other side of that know if you go over there, people are going to be smoking. So it would seem to me that maybe we could designate that as the smoking section or the smoking area where people will be smoking. So if you're going to go to the concert, you don't want to sit over there or place your mother there where you can't move her because you know that someone's going to be coming and smoking. Whereas opposed to if you're in the park, you know that you can plant your mother or anyone else, your whole family, and know that you don't have to move. So I'm wondering if we couldn't make that as a designated smoking area for
But what
park.
About the people who are waiting for the bus?
Well, they know it's a smoking area. They'll walk into the park where people aren't smoking.
They could wait upwind.
That too.
Okay.
They're pretty big. I think you can see them coming. Anyway, okay. That's just a suggestion.
No, thank you. Did you have any questions or comments? Okay, let me open this up to the public. I have two speaker request slips. Clint, are you still here? Yeah, Clint Wyrick.
It's 10 o'clock. This one's taller than me. All right. Mayor Schultz, city council members, Clint Wyrick. I live on Saratoga Avenue, Grove Beach resident here, grew up here my whole life. One thing I could tell you, too, is full disclosure, I smoked tobacco products for many years of my life. Luckily, I could say I've quit them, too. And that's why I've been participating on the San Luis Obispo County Tobacco Control Coalition for many years, currently serving its co-chair. First of all, I want to say that I'm very proud that the City Council, staff, and the Parks and Recreation Beautification Commission has been supporting this direction. This is the perfect way to go. Parks are supposed to be some family-friendly environments. You go there to enjoy yourself. One thing that secondhand smoke does is naturally throw people off that. Being a former user myself, I know one truth. We're talking about using a product. When people say smoker, they're making it as if that defines them, that's their whole life. No, it's a product. A product is something that you choose to use or don't use. When you choose to use it at a park, that's the choice of using, just like, for instance, if I said, I'm going to use a pen right now to write something down. I don't have to. We got to remember that that's in the context of what we're talking about here. So when people want to smoke somewhere else, they could choose to do that at a different time. Unless, of course, if they're addicted, and do we want to keep on encouraging addiction now? That, well, you need to go to a certain place to keep on staying in your addiction path, and that's okay and socially norm, which goes back to the family environment, goes back into wherever they're living, which exposes more people to secondhand smoke. That's always a core issue. I bring that up because this is an issue I hear all the time talking about this, and being a former tobacco user, I understand that one all too well, and I complained all my life when I was using it. Then after I quit, I was thinking, that actually wasn't a good argument. It was just for self sustaining my own wants and needs. But back to the main topic area. Whatever direction you go, it's the right direction. The bus transit area, our coalition, naturally, we want tobacco-free communities. We're not going to support exemptions because we want everyone to share in that experience of being tobacco-free and enjoying an area that they could all go to freely. People with disabilities, for instance, if they had to leave that area because someone's choosing to use a product at that moment, and then the bus comes over, and then they have to rush back over, that's not fair to them either. There's a lot of people that this isn't a very fair thing to when they have to move because someone chooses to use a product at a certain time. I hope that you all consider moving forward with this. possibly remove an exemption. If you keep that, still you're going in a good direction. Working further to see the positive results. Family-friendly environments is what makes people love this town. I've lived here for long enough to see all the parks being used. I want to see visitors and other people use them even more. I'm very glad that you're taking leadership on this, and I congratulate you all for sticking around past 10 o'clock and still being alert. Thank you.
Thank you, Clint. Come back at 11 and see if we're still here. And I will say that the actual, the other slip that I had received was from Kathleen Carl. I believe she had to leave because it sounds like a similar issue is on the county board meeting tomorrow. So she did leave a letter, and I will give this to the city clerk for good keeping, but I guess I could read this into the record on her behalf. And it says, my name is Kathleen Carl, and I am a division manager in the Slo County Public Health Department. I would like to commend you for your proposed ordinance to restrict smoking in public places. The county is actually considering its own ordinance at the Board of Supervisors meeting tomorrow. And as of your staff report, and as your staff report indicates, Pismo Beach, Royal Grande, Atascadero, San Luis Obispo have all passed ordinances in recent years. Morro Bay is the most recent jurisdiction to ban smoking in public places as they pass their outdoor ordinance in April. One of the biggest concerns we hear from jurisdictions consider these non-smoking ordinances is that people don't like government interfering with their freedom. Even non-smokers will echo the sentiment, yet sometimes it is the duty of government to interfere. Think of seatbelt laws, yeah, or motorcycle helmet laws, yeah, and how these laws save lives. It is estimated that seatbelts save 10,000 lives per year. Smoking bans like the one you are considering also save lives and reduce health risk for our most vulnerable, the young, the elderly, and people with chronic diseases. We applaud your efforts. Our tobacco control program offers free stop smoking classes each week at the Public Health Department in Grover Beach, and we will support your citizens as they make the transition to smoke-free living. Mm-hmm. And that is, again, from Kathleen Carl. So with that, I'm going to close this to the public. Oh, Sharon.
First of all, I will confess that I'm a former smoker. Had been since I was a sophomore in college, and I quit 9 years ago, cold turkey. So I am speaking from that perspective. However, I'm very much in favor of banning smoking outdoors where there are a lot of people. I have a question. If somebody is having a smoke and walks through the park and nobody else is there, are they in violation? That's number one.
Yes, they are. What else?
They would be, wouldn't
Absolutely.
They?
Absolutely.
Yes. Not that they would be cited. But my other concern is, if I lived up in that area and used that sheltered, it's not just a bench waiting for a bus. It is a sheltered area. I wouldn't be able to use it if smoking was allowed there.
Yeah.
If somebody was smoking a cigar, would they be allowed there? Are the health risks any less there than anywhere else for secondhand smoke? So I support Councilwoman Peterson in saying there is some, my former employment was in a situation where I was not allowed to smoke there or anywhere on the property. And I worked from probably 6:30 in the morning until 5 o'clock at night. And I was a smoker then. And I managed to figure out how to deal with my addiction and the restrictions. And I think that You know, if we're going to draw the line and say this is a health hazard, it's a health hazard for everyone. Thank you.
Thank you, Sharon. Okay. Okay.
Good evening again, Honorable Mayor and City Council. I, Duke Sterling, Grover Beach. I wasn't planning on speaking on this topic tonight, but it struck a little bit of a chord with me. I attended Slow Car Free a few months ago down in downtown Los Angeles, and as a result of that, I sold my primary car. I take the bus every day to work and walk a lot more and feel a lot better. And you know, I'd like to say I'm doing that for the environment, but I'm also doing it for my health. And I do sit at that bus station every day, or every morning and every evening. And I can say the smoking is not at a bad point right now, but I think if it's allowed to continue, there are plenty of other people that ride the bus along with me that are doing it for health reasons. I think it would just contradict what they're trying to do. So, thank you.
Good point. Thank you, Mrs. Sterling. Okay. Seeing no hands, I'm going to close this to the public and bring it back to the council. And let's see. So I will have to say, I'm sitting here thinking about this as well with the bus shelter, and I understand that there was some discussion about making that exempt area, but I'm sitting here thinking to myself, there's nothing that prohibits someone from walking over to the sidewalk near Rabobank where there are only cars and smoking if they need to. And I'm wondering if it makes better sense to just say anything that's contiguous to the park is a smoke-free zone.
I think so. Mm-hmm. I agree. I mean, I even agree. Though I'd said about a smoking area, but really what Debbie had said and what Mr. Sterling had said and Brenda, it's true. If we're going to do it, I guess we should just do it all the way.
Okay, so someone make a motion.
I move that we schedule the second reading and adoption for the next regular council meeting of the ordinance of the City Council of the City of Grover Beach amending Article 3 of the Grover Beach Municipal Code to add regulations restricting smoking in public parks, and we amend the exclusion and make it illegal to smoke anywhere in city parks.
I'll second that.
Clear?
Okay, there's a motion and a second. City Attorney, are we clear on that?
Yeah, implicit in the motion was an introduction of the ordinance connecting it first reading by title only.
Okay.
We amend the changes which remove subsection C from 399.11 and 1-2.
Exactly.
Okay.
Okay. So there's a motion. There's a second. If there's no additional discussion, roll call.
Yes.
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 Yes. Okay. 10:08, and I appreciate all who waited patiently here tonight. So let's move on to our consent agenda. This is an agenda where we take routine items typically as a group, and then if you've got an agenda, the recommendation on each is in parentheses. Do any member of the public want to speak to any item on consent? Okay. See. Hang on a sec. I'm getting there.
Thank you.
Okay. So now let's see. Is there any members of the council that would like to pull an item from consent?
Yes. Excuse me.
Go
yes,
ahead.
Please. Since we'd gotten supplemental information, I think that we should just pull item 14 and look at that separately, please. Mm-hmm. Which is the sale of the Brighton property.
Is that a consent?
Okay.
Oh. Yes, I'd like to, too, because I'd like to know what the changes were in the supplemental information.
Okay. So item 14.
And then I just had some comments on number 9. So I guess we need to pull it from
okay.
the comment.
Well, I'm going to suggest to pull item number 10.
Okay.
So what is your comment on item 9? Is it
it's interesting because I've sat on the council for 4 years, there were a couple of those positions that I didn't even know existed, and that I didn't know that there was compensation for. And so I realized that there's not any transparency there, because if I didn't know as a council member, and then also I felt that really if we're going to be transparent, it would be helpful to know that the term, not just the term going forward, but the number of years each council member has served on those, on each of the, anyway.
So why don't we, I'm sorry to, to interrupt.
Go ahead.
So why don't we go ahead and pull items 9, 10, and 14. So with that said, someone prepared to make a motion on the remaining items, which are 7, 8, 11, 12, 13, and 15.
Go ahead. I move that we accept staff's recommendation on the consent agenda items 7, 8, 11, 12, 13, and 15.
I'll second that.
Well, how about 16 and 17?
They're regular
business.
Gotcha.
I could do that.
So was there's a motion and there's a second. If there's no additional discussion, roll call.
Yes.
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 Yes. And then what I'm going to do is I'm going to take item number...
No,
I'm going to flip, and I'm going to go with 14.
Yes.
That's a good idea.
So let's do 14.
Yeah.
So, City Attorney, looks like you're down here. Do you want to just have the council members ask their questions rather than a full staff report, given the hour of the night?
Well, Mike, you pulled it, didn't you?
No, it's
14.
Yes.
14. We were given a new version of the agreement of purchase and sale, and we'd like to know what those changes were.
Here are the changes, and it was a living document until last minute, and making some changes. We added, on the first page, added the APN number.
Mm.
On the second page, we finalized paragraph 3.2, with the name of the title company, and also shorten the time period. On 10, escrow and closing, we've again finalized the name of the company, the amount of deposit, I believe, and just further information. We've tightened that section up. And we... on 15, we added the escrow holder information for the purposes of notices. And I think those are the only changes.
Okay. And these were all acceptable to the purchaser? Yes,
yes, they were.
All right, thank you.
Okay, were there any other questions?
I had some questions, and I'm just scrolling through to see what they were. I'm sorry. I think that they were all covered. I think they were all covered. I just wanted to make sure that, I think when I looked through it, everything I had asked was covered.
Okay. Yes. So now that we've pulled this item, this is an item that I'm going to see if anyone from the public would like to address tonight. So... Okay.
I have a comment. No. You're going to bring it back?
Yeah, I just, okay, because I think there was a question asked of the city attorney about if this was acceptable to the purchaser, and you did affirm that, correct?
Yes, I did.
And that is correct?
I emailed it to you.
Oh.
Yeah.
I would just. So do you mind, Mr. Volt, if we just let the record show that the potential purchaser is in agreement with the amendments? Thank you, sir. Okay, I'm going to close this to the public, bring it back to the council. Yes, Vice Mayor.
I want to compliment the council. All of the members, I want to compliment the purchasers and the staff, because I think everybody has worked diligently to bring this to a very prompt, equitable conclusion. I think everybody is happy. I'm glad to see that it has worked out so well. And I compliment everybody that was involved in it, including the purchasers, Mr. and Mrs. Vo. My compliments to all of you.
Thank you. Okay. Someone would like to make a motion on this item?
Yeah, I'll make a motion if I may. I move that we adopt the resolution approving the sale of the land located at 920 Brighton Avenue to Daryl and Linda Voth.
I'll second that.
Okay, there's a motion and a second. If there's no additional discussion, roll call.
I would like to make a comment, please.
Yes.
Thank you. I would just like to make it known why I'm going to vote no. I still do not believe in the sale of any city assets at this time. Thank you.
Okay, very good. Roll call.
Yes.
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 No.
Yes. Okay, let's move.
May I please ask for a 5-minute break? Or even less?
No, actually, we'll take a 5-minute break.
Okay, thank you.
Great. We're going to reconvene the regular meeting for the Grover Beach City Council for Monday, July 16th, 2012. And we had just concluded with item number 14. And what I'm going to do is take item number 17 next. And this is, so I'll take that and then we'll go back to items 9 and 10 since they were pulled from consent. So this item number 17 is consideration of approval of a lease agreement between the city of Grove Beach and the San Luis Obispo County YMCA for operation of the South County Skate Park. Ms. Petker.
I'm going to take the staff report.
She was just here.
Is she coming down the hall?
We're doing shadow animals on the wall.
Honorable Mayor, Council Members, Kathy Petker, Parks and Recreation Programs Director. We are bringing this item to you this evening. As you know, the city owns the South County Skate Park. It's located at 1750 Ramona Avenue. Unfortunately, the skate park has been closed since April 9th in an effort to save funds for the remainder of the fiscal year. And during that process, we had to lay off 3 part-time employees. And in order to make the skate park open for youth for the remainder of this summer as well as in the future, we wanted to bring this directly to you. We were unable to route it to the commission because we didn't have a quorum last month. So this proposal for consideration of the lease agreement is for 1 year with the San Luis Obispo County YMCA. And for some background information, the skate park was built in 1999. It's all concrete underground. It was the first one built in our county and in the area. It's highly popular. When the city originally built it, they got funding from the county and the cities of Rio Grande and Pismo Beach and the city of Grover Beach, and they also received approximately $50,000 in in-kind project funds for the restroom. And then years later, we also received a grant to build the staff kiosk. So that's the construction aspect of it. And then when it was opened, the city officials basically opened up the lot with just the concrete, and the actual landscaping hadn't been installed yet, and it had been running for about 6 months. And unfortunately, the unknown was what was going to happen when the skaters came in and the laws from the state were sent down stating that the skaters were supposed to be in full gear and our police officers were trying to enforce it, and it was basically like herding cats. So eventually the park became vandalized and loitering and bullying and drugs and completely unsavory behavior was happening. So the city council directed staff to turn it around. So staff and the commission worked together, and and fundraising was done, and we implemented the 8-foot fence. We staffed it, and we also began charging a fee, which created immediate overnight buy-in from skaters, and the participation immediately went to the youth. And then we were starting to get the kids back instead of the adults. And we're now, you know, we were serving kids between 2 and 17 mostly, and obviously a much safer environment for the youth. Over the years, as our budgets declined, our staffing was declined, as well as our skate park budgets being declined. So we were unable to maintain it open at an optimal level, hence is the reason why we had to close it. And it should be noted as well that the city staff, as well as the police department, do not recommend that the skate park gate just be opened like before. And in our experience and research, as well as past cities we've seen and across the country, that the free-for-all skate parks are completely not a happy environment or an image that you want in your community to have that reputation, as well as, again, the vandalism and the type of loitering that occurs. A skate park is a great asset to our city. We did approach the Boys and Girls Club, and they did view it, and they came out, and they met with their board, but they were unable to provide a proposal in writing. We did receive the proposal from the YMCA, and Linda Wingert is here in the audience this evening. She's our South County Regional Director, and she's here to answer any questions regarding the program proposal that they would like to offer for the lease. And they would be the primary operator of the oversight and monitoring and ensuring rules are enforced by their trained staff, and most importantly keeping it open for many hours and enhanced programming and activities and special events and concessions, and also being able to create a South County Skate Park Committee that they've already kind of loosely been organizing. And just in the discussions with their board, they've already received nearly $5,500 in seed money promised if the skate park agreement is approved. And the last item I wanted to inform the city council of is that after this evening, if the city council chooses to support the lease agreement proposal, that it still does need to have a final approval by the YMCA executive board at their level. So the goal will be to reopen as early in August as possible, depending on how soon the meetings can go. And the city council has the following alternative to approve the lease agreement for the San Luis Obispo County YMCA to operate the South County Skate Park, or provide tracks with further direction. And staff recommends that the city council approve the lease agreement. I'd be happy to answer any questions. Thank you.
Thank you, Kathy. Any questions of staff?
Not staff. I do, yeah. Actually.
Councilmember Mona.
Is there any concerns about they will cover all insurance liability, et cetera?
Yes.
Yes, okay. And are these the hours they're talking about, 9 to 5, do you know? Monday through Friday?
That's referring to the actual YMCA main office in San Luis Obispo, that the on-site staff will be able to have access to those staff if they need assistance. But their actual on-site programming staff, our programming hours, are going to be similar to the Lucia Mar School District during the school year. And then also probably 9 a.m. to 7 p.m. in the summer, and they're going to have it open a lot if they're able. But it's loose right now in the agreement because they're going to be flexible with kids' schedules as well.
Okay, thank you.
Okay. No questions? All right.
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah? Okay.
From the contractual obligation, the liability, I understand that the YMCA has their own policy that will cover the skate park. Would they be willing, or has it been resolved, that they would name the city of Grover Beach as an additional insured on their policy?
Yes, that is a requirement.
It is. Okay. Thank you.
That's all I have.
Okay. This is a business item, but since Linda has waited here so long, I'm going to open this up and see if she has any comments or anyone else on this item.
I've been here so long. Thank you, Mayor, City Council members, staff. I appreciate the opportunity. I appreciate your careful consideration for partnering with the YMCA to be able to open up this wonderful asset for our youth in South County. Not only youth, but parents and dads and adults, and it's just sitting there, and I just am so passionate about being able to bring the opportunity to open it back up and to move our mission forward as an organization and to be a bigger part of Grover Beach community. We have after-school fights, and we do camps, and Mayor Schulz, I've seen you around the Y once or twice. So I just wanted to extend my appreciation and gratitude and thank you for your support.
Great. Thank you, Linda. Is there anyone else?
Good evening, Jeff Lee, your chair of your Parks, Rec, and Beautification Commission. I'll make these real brief. I'm speaking as a private citizen at the moment. The Parks and Rec Commission, like Kathy said, has not had a chance to take a look at this, at the agreement. However, I did take a look at it as a private citizen, and I think this is in the best interest of the skate park. Not only, like Linda was saying, mostly on behalf of the participants and the users of the skate park. I'll put my Parks and Rec chair hat back on for just a second in the fact that I'll say that I would support this as a one-year agreement, and if there are any amendments and so forth that need to be done or modifications that are done throughout the course of the year, Parks and Rec Commission would love to be able to provide input and provide feedback to you for your consideration at the next annual renewal.
Great. Thank you, Jeff.
Terrific.
Liz White, North Grover Beach. Kathy had just asked us about the provisional eco-rotary of the Central Coast, and we would love to provide any help and services that we could, including fundraising, cleaning up, projects, anything that they would need assistance with, we would love to help them. Thank you.
Thank you. Okay. Seeing no one else come forward, I'm going to close it and bring it back. Someone on the council prepared to make a motion on this item?
I will.
I move that we approve the lease agreement for San Luis Obispo YMCA to operate the South County Skate Park and authorize the mayor to execute the agreement on behalf of the city.
I'll second that.
Okay, there's a motion and a second. If there's no additional discussion, roll call.
Yes.
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 Yes. Okay, so Lynn, let's move back to our pool consent agenda items, and let's take item number 9 first. And I believe, Councilmember Peterson, you request this item be pulled. So,
yes, and I really just, when I saw it presented the way it was presented, I realized that it would be helpful if we're looking at just understanding more about it to have some kind of a matrix. And it's not something that we necessarily have to have now, but certainly the next time around for appointments, that showed all the committee positions, what the remuneration is, if any, how they're appointed, whether it's by the council, the mayor, or some other body that dictates, and the terms of the appointees, not going forward, but how long they've served also. Mm-hmm. Because then I think we have a much bigger, clearer picture, and I realize that I've realized it as we've gone along, but it became more clear to me that it wasn't clear as we got this. So I don't know that it's something we necessarily need to act on right now, but I realized that I didn't even have the full picture of the committees and how long everybody served on
them. Well, the description that we get every year, it does have the, it has, if there's remuneration included.
I guess so, but I didn't know about the, there was one that I didn't know about. There was
probably
an insurance
APCD.
Commission
oh.
I wasn't aware of. And I don't actually know how long each of the, I don't know how long each of us has served on each of the committees, unless
that's a good idea.
Unless
I
it's
agree.
Ones that I have, you know, for the, I've been on the council for 4 years, so I have a pretty clear picture. But for those of you who've been on the council for 6 or 8 years or 10 years, I have no idea.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. So I just feel that it would be we'd have the bigger picture and the clearer picture.
It'll be all in one document as well.
Mm-hmm. City manager, city attorney, can you talk about what is this, the form itself, that's on this agenda?
The form is a new FPTC form, which basically is an optional submission, but if approved, adopted, and approved by the council and maintained by the city, it allows all of you to sit and consider the appointments. If you recall, we used to play musical chairs with resolutions and people getting up and not getting up, because if any resolution contains someone who will be receiving a monetary benefit from the appointment, that person would recuse themselves from voting on that resolution or that thing. So if the council moves forward with adopting this form, from here on out, you can all deliberate over those appointments that are within the council's power to deliberate, and without having to recuse yourself or declare a conflict of interest because there is some stipend or some form of compensation for the position. Additionally, open government.
Okay. So tonight you're talking about adopting use of this form, and then in January, typically when we have committee assignments, then that's an opportunity to have that discussion.
Mm-hmm. That's correct.
So I think we're okay.
Yeah.
With that.
Wait a minute. I don't understand.
What
I don't think
understand?
I've ever. I've only been on the council a short time, but the way that I just understood the way you described it, I don't think anyone has ever excused themselves during adoption.
Well, they did.
Did they?
Yes, we have.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Consistently,
all the time. Mm-hmm.
Where there is remuneration involved.
I remember jumping
up. Up into two or three, four different resolutions, and everybody acts on different resolutions.
I don't remember that in January.
I remember jumping up and getting out of here to be an alternate.
To be an alternate? Mm-hmm. Okay. Now, in lieu of what I asked for earlier, does this pose any problem in my request that we discuss the sanitation district representation?
It's not connected to it at all.
Not at all.
All right. Thank you.
Okay. So that's item 9. It was pulled from consent. Is there any member of the public that would like to address this item before us? And this is adoption of the form itself, not the official appointments. Okay, seeing no one come forward, to bring it back to the council. Thank City Attorney.
Thank you. I apologize. City Attorney.
I've been proceeding under the impression that this was a selective process, and that's the way I've been reading all the circulars on it. There's a new one that the city clerk just handed me, which does say city agency must post on its website a single Form 806. So
well, there you have it.
Without any further research than that, I will withdraw the optional option of my report.
So we don't need to adopt it then?
No, you must.
No,
we
must.
We must adopt it. Okay.
Can I make a motion?
Yes, you may.
that City Council adopt for its use the FPPC approved Form 806.
I'll second it, because we must.
There you go. Okay, there's a motion and a second. If there's no additional discussion, do roll call.
Yes.
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 Yes. Okay, let's move on to item number 10. Okay, it's 10:40, and we do have a resolution that says if we are going to go beyond 11 p.m. conducting a public business, that we must make a motion, and it has to be approved by a supermajority. And I'm just wondering if we should do that now. I'm not sure how long this item is going to take. We should probably. So what we need is someone to make a motion that we continue doing the city's business beyond 11 p.m. If they make a motion and if it's seconded, then four out of the five must vote yes. And if that is not the case, then we will stop at 11 p.m. Correct?
Okay. Can we stop right now?
The truth of the matter is, we certainly don't have to go beyond 11. So, if it is the pleasure of this council, we will take this one last item. I believe we had a couple of closed session items that I've learned that we can.
Okay. The first one is Ms. Agenda, so we will the case name is wrong, so we'll just withdraw it.
Okay. We'll go with it. So then let's just make this our last item, and then we will. I know that there were some discussions that people wanted to have on communications and then committee reports. So let's go forward with this one right now and see where we are. Mr. Ray, you're on. This is item 10. This is an award of bid for street sweeping services.
Thank you, Honorable Mayor and City Council. Greg Ray, Public Works Director, City Engineer. At the May 21st City Council meeting, staff presented a draft request for proposal for street sweeping services. The request for proposal was approved by council and advertised by staff the following week. On Tuesday, June 26, staff opened two bids submitted for the street sweeping services. SP Maintenance Services Incorporated was the lowest responsive bidder. Staff is seeking council approval this evening to award the bid to SP Maintenance Services Incorporated in an estimated annual cost of $44,268 per year. And staff is recommending award of service level option 2A. 2A is about the same as the pre-April service level, with the exception that residential street sweeping is reduced to four times per year. There are another number of other options that could be considered. Provide some more detail on 2A. We added a couple of enhancements. I'll mention those right off the top. The primary enhancements are that painted city medians, in this case Oak Park, areas in Oak Park and 4th, would be swept in their entirety, and curbed medians would be swept along the curb lines. Also, at council's request, the block along Ramona Avenue from 8th to 11th has been added in as a part of this option 2A. Essentially, back to the original program, major arterial, which is West Grand Avenue and the side streets for one block, would be swept twice per week. The remainder of the minor arterials of collectors and the parking lot behind the post office would be swept once per week. And then North and South Grover, all the residential streets would be swept four times per year under this option, recommended option 2A. As I mentioned earlier, the staff's recommendation is to approve option 2A and award the contract to SP Maintenance Services. Alternatives to consider would be to adopt the resolution to award contract to SP Maintenance for a different service level or some kind of a modified version of those that have been offered, or to provide additional direction to staff. That concludes my report, and I'd be happy to answer any questions you have.
So, Greg, I'm looking at the graphic on the screen, and I'm looking at a route with bid option 2 and 2A, and it had a small section of Ramona on it.
And I apologize. I'm not sure why that's not showing on this.
Because that is an older version.
Yeah, because in your bid packet, or your council packet, you'll see what actually went out to bid, mm-hmm. and it does include that block on Ramona from 8th to 11th. So
okay.
I just missed this in this
very good. Slide. And I had requested that this be pulled because I was having some concerns regarding the amount of times that we would be sweeping. And I guess what you're saying is basically if a street is not shown on here, it would be done four times for the year.
That's correct. So anything that's not highlighted in here would be four times per year. What's highlighted in here, dark, not dashed, would be twice a week, and what's dashed on here would be once per week.
Okay. And so I was just thinking about Long Branch, which goes by Grover Beach Elementary School, as well as Mentone, which goes by Mentone Park and South 16th Street Park. So very high visible and noticeable streets. And I was just wondering what would that cost me if those were added back in, if there was interest from the council majority.
The basic cost, and we built in the ability into the contract to add or subtract streets pretty much at will. The cost is $20 per lane mile, or per curb mile, I apologize. Okay. So, you know, you assume, take the length of each of those streets, double it, and I'm guessing you're in the range. If you swept them on the once per week, I'm going to throw a guess out there, a couple thousand bucks per year.
So there would be an ability to add, or you would have to kind of figure out which streets we tweak more frequently.
Yep, we can adjust the final awarded contract based on council's decision this evening, and throughout the year we could make additional modifications if at some point in time it became apparent that we were sweeping too much or not enough in a particular area.
Okay, because I do like the idea that we're doing Ramona, because obviously that is in the heart of the city. And buses are there, people are there. So I just was concerned that we would not be sweeping Long Branch or Mentone often enough. So I don't know. That's just a thought, but let's have some discussion on that.
Well, I had mentioned Long Branch last time, but nobody had really was real interested in it. It was just a concern of mine because it is, you know, the school's right there. But
well, I'm sure I wouldn't pay attention. No, I'm kidding.
Apparently not. That's okay. I'm used to it. But what I'd really like to say, though, is I really appreciate the flexibility that you did build mm-hmm. into this document.
Mm-hmm.
The fact that you can add and subtract at will whenever it's necessary, I appreciate that. And you did a really good job, I think, of crafting this so that it can work for, you know, for the city. So thank you very much.
I had a question.
Well, yeah. Debbie?
I'm all in favor of everything that's been said so far. And I one of the comments that was made was that the sweeping previously had been done the day after trash pickup. And now I notice that it would appear that the dates that it, or the days it's being done on are not days after trash pickup. Was there any reason for that, or... It looks like it's being done mostly on... I mean, I know it's only being done four times a year, so maybe it's not as relevant on a lot of the streets.
Yeah, it would be pretty much irrelevant. I mean, we could certainly reschedule that, I'm sure, with the SP Maintenance Services...
if needed.
...agreement. We could probably choose the day, but,
mm-hmm.
you know, okay. four times per year, it's not...
Okay. Yeah, Mayor Pro Tem.
Let me ask a question a little off on the sweeping, but the bus stops over on Ramona, I have noticed over there when I go over to the concerts, an awful lot of grease accumulating on the street. Who is responsible for cleaning that, and should that not be cleaned up some sort of a regular basis?
I think that's a pretty good question. I'm not going to guess who's responsible for cleaning it up. It's likely it's the city. Should it be cleaned up on a regular basis? It depends. If it's generating grease-laden runoff into the storm drain system for some reason, we should have an interest in it. If it's not, if it's just spotted and it's an appearance issue, you know, that's another discussion altogether. So.
Well, I guess just leave it alone. Would you be so kind as to take a look at it and see what you think?
If council desires that, you know, as a unanimously, yeah, absolutely.
So, yeah, we'll discuss that. So, anything else?
I just have a question.
Okay.
During the period of time in which we've had no street sweeping, have you noticed, anyone noticed an increase of, you know, trash? Has it accumulated, or residents helping out by cleaning up in front of their homes?
Well, it's interesting. I have not received much in the way of complaints. Rumor has it there have been some complaints, but I just haven't received them personally. From what I've observed, in some areas in particular, those that have quite a bit of landscaping, there seems to be landscape debris accumulating, you know, more in the curves and corners. Some trash has accumulated. It's better than I thought it was going to be. You know, this was just a year-end stopgap measure to help with the budget. But in general, yes, there's been some accumulation. I think with four times a year, you could expect some accumulation. But folks seem to be paying attention to the prohibition on blowing landscape debris, and they seem to be doing a pretty good job of keeping their streets at least somewhat clean.
All right, thank you.
Okay. And I would just say that the pilot project that we did was a short period of time, and if we move to a year, I can only imagine, because I do get some of the complaints, but I imagine when school's back in, people are utilizing the parks and at the school, and if there is an accumulation, I'm sure we'll hear about that. So I appreciate that flexibility. So at this point, it looks like there is some flexibility in staff's proposal, but I do want to make sure that we're giving a direction and it reflects the majority of the council. I had brought up Long Branch and Mentone, and I guess Karen had brought up Long Branch before. So is there any interest from the council that as we move forward, and we direct staff to take a closer look at those two streets and adjust the street sweeping as necessary.
Yes, and I think any others that maybe might come to our attention that, you know, we may have missed, or there might be some kind of a special event or something that might cause the street to need some additional attention.
Mm-hmm. Okay, and then the Mayor Pro Tem had brought up, I think you were talking about on Ramona, is that where you were? You were talking about with respect to if there are oils or whatnot building up in the street, that maybe we can give staff direction to kind of take a look at that and see if that's something that can be done. But if it is something that requires a substantial amount of attention, then obviously you'll have to bring a report back to us and we'll figure something out. Phyllis?
Well, in regards to the buses, isn't that something we might also discuss with SCAT? You know, if it's the buses that are leaking, they should maybe make sure that they're properly maintained vehicles.
Well, then, yes, we would certainly be bringing that up to SCAT if that's, in fact, the case, yes. Okay? So is everyone's okay with that as direction? Okay, so, I will support the staff recommendation. So, to help move us along, is there someone prepared to make a motion?
I'll move for staff's recommendation. Adopt the resolution awarding the street sweeping services contract to SP Maintenance Service Inc., approving service level option number 2A, and authorize the mayor to execute the contract on behalf of the city.
I'll second that.
Okay, there's a motion and a second. Roll call.
Yes.
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 Yes. Okay. We've got 5 minutes We're going to defer. Let's defer council committee reports. Mm-hmm. And city council member items. We have none at this time. Council communications.
I just wanted to real quickly say, I had the opportunity to take a look at the new dispatch over at the police station. I know they're understaffed, so I didn't want to trouble them, but I ended up getting about a 45-minute tour. And the reason I brought it up is because there was a large item on a large payment went out, and it was grant-funded for that project that came up in our warrant register while we were in our regular, anyway, in our consent agenda tonight. And as well as we think that they're the best police department in the county, I think it would be fair to say they're probably technologically the best in the county too, and they've done some extremely carefully thought out, wise, conscientious purchasing, and I was fascinated by what they can do now by the technology in the vehicles, and I won't go into more detail than that because we're all tired, but it was really impressive. And if you get the chance to check it out, I said to him, gosh, it's just like NCIS. I was exaggerating, but it's really cool. They've got really good stuff. They bought very well. They did really well.
Very
with
good.
Their grant money.
Okay. Phyllis?
I would like to go back to the request I had about Ms. White's problems, because I was reading the information given to us about the zoning, and I happened to notice in this section of residential about a second residential dwelling and how it says that it needs to be owner-occupied if it's in an R1 zone, and also about the fact that if there is a second residential dwelling on the top of the building, that it can be no more than 30% of the bottom where the owner is occupied. And so I'm wondering if we need to take a serious look at her concerns because of these particular issues. Plus, I, out of curiosity, when they saw it was for rent, decided to go in and take a look. And indeed, the alleged stairs being blocked are indeed blocked, and I think that she does have some concerns that are valid.
Okay, very good. So, staff, again, where are you on this as a code enforcement case?
As far as a code enforcement case, to our knowledge, there is no enforcement necessary currently at the location. The blocked stairs are not unlawful. Not the best ergonomical solution, but there's no law prohibiting that. It is a single-family residence, and I think if it is used and rented as two separate dwellings, then that constitutes a violation of the zoning code. If it's rented as a single-family residence with a blocked stairway, it's not an illegal use.
Okay. So I would say at this point, then you have gotten information, and a code enforcement, is there a code enforcement action underway or not?
The code enforcement action has concluded at the eviction of the current the uses that were there that came to city's attention.
Okay. So.
Also, when I was touring it, the gentleman did talk about renting it separately.
Okay. I guess at this point, what does the council majority want to do with this item? City attorney?
And if I may, Honorable Mayor, council members, I think that under the circumstances and with the threats that we've received with regard to legal actions, if you want to get any more in depth than that on this subject, then I would recommend that if the majority of you wants to agendize it, it should be agendized in closed session.
Mm-hmm. Okay, is there interest from the council when placing this on an agenda in closed session to have more discussion?
Sure.
Okay, Councilor Wright.
I don't have a problem with doing that.
Okay. So then I think we have consensus to do that. Okay. We got 6, 5, 4, 3, 2, 1, 0. So with that, I had a couple of items, but I'm going to hold, because we do, in fact, have a resolution that says unless there's a majority vote, we cannot conduct city business beyond 11 p.m. And with the fact that it is 11 p.m. and 16 seconds, we are adjourned.